the side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, do have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I got a message last night from a very old friend of mine who is a decades-long student of Chinese, the language, and China, the country, Chinese history. He wrote, "I've been meaning to tell you, I keep forgetting to mention it. No Chinese person I have ever asked has ever heard of 'May you live in interesting times' being a Chinese curse, which has sadly completely destroyed the opening that I would normally deploy on mornings like this. Now I understand why the Chinese think it's a curse to say, 'May you live in interesting times.' Because whether you like it or not, these are interesting times. And whether you like it or not, the prospect of another changing of the guard at Downing Street, just a little more than 2 years after we thought that it was over for good, is back in play."
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, ministers have moved to defend Keir Starmer following suggestions he needs to sack his top team following the Peter Mandelson scandal. Sir Keir Starmer's admitted he knew of Lord Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, but says he repeatedly lied about the extent of it. Backbenchers are now pushing for Sir Keir to change his advisers in wake of the saga. Labour MP Ian Byrne says despite apologising, the Prime Minister is still under intense pressure.
"He's lost a huge amount of confidence within the Parliamentary Labour Party. He's lost a huge amount of confidence within the country, and he's in a very perilous political situation at this moment, and he needs a miracle. He needs something to turn it around."
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing in relation to Jeffrey Epstein. Talks have started in Oman this morning between the US and Iran as Washington looks to pause Tehran's nuclear program. President Trump has repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solutions found. Iran says it is open to discussions around its atomic program, but has ruled out talks over its missile defences. The Home Office says nearly 60,000 illegal migrants have been deported since the general election in 2024. 15,000 people have been removed since then, while 43,000 others have left voluntarily. More than 65,000 people have arrived in the UK on small boats since Labour came to power. Migration Minister Mike Tapp has told LBC deportations will be scaled up.
"We made promises to the public that we'd restore order and control. This is the highest in a decade. It's up by around 30%. On the previous government. What we've said to people is, if you're here illegally, we will work hard to remove people. We'll ramp it up. When countries aren't taking people back, we will threaten visa impositions, which basically means we'll stop their visas for coming here."
A review of the drug statins suggests that they're far safer than previously thought. A study by Oxford University found no increased risk of listed side effects, such as memory loss and depression. Around 8 million people in the UK are thought to take the drugs to lower cholesterol, cutting the chance of heart attack or stroke. And the UK's biggest mortgage lender says the average house price has risen above £300,000 for the first time. But Halifax says wage growth has outpaced house price inflation since 2022. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 5 at 10,303. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours possible in the south. Later, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, for which I should thank you. I don't think I mentioned it yesterday. 80,000 more people are tuning into this programme than during the last calendar quarter, which is frankly ridiculous. But obviously, with mortgages to pay and a growing family, it is something to which I remain infinitely grateful to you for. What's the best headline of the morning, do you think? They are all circling similar territory. Arguably, they're all circling the corpse, somewhat prematurely, of Keir Starmer's prime ministerial career. But this is from The Guardian, and I thought I'd turn first to a left-leaning newspaper just to be clear about the extent of the problem, lest there be any doubt. It's tragic that a decent PM will be brought down by Mandelson's sleaze, writes Polly Toynbee, one of the grand dames of liberal journalism for decades now. In fact, quite possibly the grandest dam of all. But it's a matter of when, not if. You sort of have that in your left hand, and then in your right hand, Will's contribution. Considering the calibre of who wants Starmer gone, I'm starting to want him to stay. I know exactly what you mean. It's a sort of form of contrarianism. I find myself thinking more this week about Boris Johnson than Henry VIII, which is not a happy place to be. But that list we ran through yesterday of all the things that people now adamant that Keir Starmer has to go for the crime of believing a liar, who all believed liars. You'd think, wouldn't you, if you'd fallen for Boris Johnson's countless calumnies and corruptions, if you defended them, if you'd excused them, if he was still pretending that he wasn't fired for a succession of hideous transgressions and was fired, or indeed dispatched by his own members for having a slice of cake or a glass of Prosecco, if he was still subscribing to all that bilge, you'd think that you might have developed enormous sympathy for gullibility. Imagine being a supporter of Brexit and Boris Johnson, and suddenly now, in Keir Starmer's case, being convinced that gullibility is a terrible, terrible crime. It's a career-ending fault, gullibility. Say people who told you Brexit would be brilliant, Boris Johnson was a stand-up guy, Liz Truss was an economic genius, and austerity was a necessary response to the global financial crisis of 2008. Are there any more gullible people, I wonder, in the world today than those who thought that Donald Trump would be good for the UK, never mind the United States, or that Brexit would make Britain better? Just observing that, because it's meaningless, really, in the great scheme of things, pointing out the hypocrisy of hypocrites is a thankless and pointless task. But it did remind me of one thing when you look at Trump and Johnson. And I apologise for directing your attention to both of them so early in the morning while your breakfast is yet to settle in your duodenum. That was probably biologically inaccurate, actually. But it's all about quantity, not quality of scandal, isn't it? I mean, if Keir Starmer had sent Wes Streeting or, I don't know, Lisa Nandy to Balmoral to lie to the king, do you think his career would be over now? I actually think it would be, because it would stand out so violently from the rest of his leadership, from the rest of his political career. If Keir Starmer had suffered the resignation of not one but two independent advisers on ministerial ethics, because they were so disgusted at his contempt for ethics, his career would actually have been over. It's like Donald Trump. It's quite hard to explain this, but I think all you've really got to do is outline the parameters of it, and it all falls into place and makes sense. You know that many of the things... Do you know what Donald Trump's done today? He's shared a social media post that portrays the Obamas, Michelle and Barack Obama's heads transferred onto the bodies of apes. The single, or arguably among the single most racist tropes in human history. And the President of the United States is just dropping it with absolute confidence and impunity with the in front of the entire world. That, correct me if I'm wrong, that would have been career-ending. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever you want to say. And of course, this is what is so interesting about Starmer. For the avoidance of doubt, I think he is in very, very potentially career-ending territory. But it's important to highlight how, on the one hand, how ridiculous it is, but on the other, how desirable it is that we actually go back to a world in which transgressions are punished. And sometimes even unfairly, because to punish transgressions is infinitely preferable to unpunishing them or to not punishing them. There's no point arguing with it. It's just true. Keir Starmer stands accused of believing a liar. And the people who are baying for his blood most violently and most loudly are the people who are still living with the shame and humiliation of believing the biggest liar ever to occupy a position of power in this country. And they believed him when he did much worse things than believe a liar. They believed him when he sent Jacob Rees-Mogg to Balmoral to lie to the late Queen. They believed him when he lied about breaking laws the rest of us were required to observe during COVID lockdowns. He lied to us about the decoration of his own flat. He lied to his editors about his own godfather. But it doesn't matter. I'm just pointing out that Starmer, from one angle, is in an almost incomprehensible position. His career, his prime ministerial career, and that's why I'm pointing to Polly Toynbee. I don't want any allegations of falling for right-wing conspiracies or jumping on bandwagons. It breaks my heart that the people responsible for the four donkeys of the apocalypse that have besieged this country over the last 10 years are having a good day, are having a good week, are seeing their chances of having yet another go, a fifth go at finishing the country off, increase with every passing day and every new revelation about Mandelson Epstein. Brexit, Boris Johnson, austerity, Liz Truss, all of those things are part of the same gang, part of the same project, and they are on the rise this week, as a consequence, largely, of Keir Starmer making such an almighty mess of it. Making such an almighty mess of so much. And it boils down, I'm afraid, and again, I have more patience at this point in my life than I've ever had before, but the idea that anybody on this programme, i.e. me, is jumping on right-wing anti-Starmer bandwagons is so palpably absurd that I struggle even to give it airspace, but you cannot argue with the fact that he outsources everything. As Patrick Maguire explains rather brilliantly in The Times today. So to veer from The Guardian to The Times and find them exploring quite similar territory is a mark of how much trouble Keir Starmer is in. He outsources economic policy to Rachel Reeves, the AI policy to Tony Blair, campaign management to Pat McFadden, devolution to Gordon Brown, defence to George Robertson, health to Alan Milburn, foreign policy to Jonathan Powell, and the rest of it to Morgan McSweeney, who then outsources some of it to Peter Mandelson, and all of a sudden, as Patrick Maguire rather brilliantly writes, you're left with the bill. It doesn't seem fair. Peter lied. But that's the way it works. And again, like Polly Toynbee and The Guardian, Maguire concludes, you're a perfectly decent man who means well, but you're not a politician, and you knew that all along, and that is why you have to take the blame. I know most of the things that you will remind me of this morning. I did it yesterday, but I appreciate you don't listen to all 3 hours of my burblings with a forensic ear. But the long list of people who greeted Peter Mandelson's appointment with enthusiasm doesn't matter in the great scheme of things, because politics is not a science. Politics is not a science. I don't know what it is, but that observation yesterday about momentum and critical mass has, if anything, become more pertinent in the last 24 hours than ever before. So Boris Johnson went, ultimately, and it's extraordinary how many people forget this, for promoting a man that he knew faced numerous allegations of sexual impropriety. Funny, really, in the shadow of the Epstein scandal, that what finally did for Boris Johnson was not any of the things that I've mentioned before. It was the the simple promotion of a man he knew was facing multiple allegations of sexual impropriety. And that's why I'm interested today in your neat explanation of why Keir Starmer's position is now so shaky. Some people will be uncomfortable with me reminding you of previous prime ministers who were on shaky territory, but that's because they fell for it. They were, like Keir Starmer, they were very, very gullible, and they fell for a massive liar. Keir Starmer has fallen for the massive lies of a massive liar, it seems, Peter Mandelson. And so did everybody who was defending Boris Johnson a few years ago. They fell for the massive lies of a massive liar, and their shame persists. But it's important to understand the difference, not the similarities. And the difference is this. There is no list of corruptions and calumnies. There is no catalogue of wrongdoing. There is no record of egregious conduct. Every single time Keir Starmer has had the opportunity to do the right thing, he's done the right thing. He's referred colleagues to independent advisers. He's overseen the departure from the cabinet of Angela Rayner. When previous prime ministers have instructed colleagues to form a circle around wrongdoing, to tear up the rule book instead of punishing the person that has broken the rules, Keir Starmer has done almost everything right. You cannot, this morning, make me a list of things that he's done wrong in a moral universe. You can point to mistakes, you can point to missteps, you can point to U-turns, but you can't point to a catalogue of calumny and corruption as we could with previous prime ministers, or to absolutely, unbelievable incompetence as we could with previous prime ministers. The question I'm asking you this morning is, what can you point to? What can you point to? And the answer is this story, Believing Peter Mandelson, which is why my first invitation to you this morning is to explain really clearly and really concisely why Keir Starmer is in so much trouble. Because we kind of gloss over that. We're working on the principle that he just is. We're working on the principle that if we're all dancing around or all circling the same corpse, then, or at least the same body, then it must be a corpse. But if you, and I don't know if you can do this, I genuinely don't know whether or not it is even relevant or pertinent to try to put Keir Starmer's current situation in the context of previous prime ministers. It seems fairly clear to me that you should, but of course we live in a country where 80 to 90% of the media is practicing extremely weapons-grade amnesia when it comes to all of the things that they've encouraged their readers to support over the last 10 years. So I think it falls to us, as these things often do, I think it falls to us, to you and to me, to put this into the context of previous prime ministers. That's what we've always done in the past. It's why we talk about Margaret Thatcher so much and the poll tax and the thing that essentially ended her career. It's why we talk about the Iraq War and Tony Blair's legacy. It's why we talk about Black Wednesday and John Major hanging on to a zombie government until the 1997 election. It's why we talk about what did for Liz Truss in the context of the markets and what did for Boris Johnson in the context of lies and moral bankruptcy. We always talk about prime ministers' final days or prime ministers' travails in the context of other prime ministers. But we have created a country now, thanks largely to those four donkeys of the apocalypse. We've created a country where everybody who supported any of those four things, and don't forget that most people who supported one of them supported four of them, austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, have to not only practice collective amnesia, but insist that the rest of the country does too. So we won't today, we won't practice collective amnesia. We will talk about the mess, the self-inflicted mess that Keir Starmer finds himself in, and the very real possibility that he is now running out of road, that he is essentially presiding over a managed departure from office. A, in the context of what has happened in the last week. B, in the context of what has happened in the last year, because it is more or less a year since Peter Mandelson was sent to Washington, amid cheers and bouquets, remember, and C, in the context of British political history. I really like the last point, but obviously my loyalties and biases will make that seem more important to me than it does to somebody who was stupid enough to fall for the four donkeys of the apocalypse. Yeah, I just came up with that today, you can tell, so I'm probably going to be hitting that button inappropriately often this morning. It's quite a nice one, right? The fourth. And of course, you're now sending me a long list of all the things that I've forgotten about Boris Johnson, but he is only one prime minister. I want you to tell me, in the context of British political history, why Keir Starmer is in so much trouble. And if you can't do that, we've got a real problem, right? Why is Keir Starmer in so much trouble? And if you can't answer that question without casting an eye over at least the last 10 years of British politics, then we've got a real problem. Now, for the avoidance of doubt, I think he's in so much trouble, partly as a consequence of straws and camels' backs, that although this is a very, very big problem, a very big scandal, if it had happened without the backdrop of, well, the outsourcing of almost everything that I've described to you, and the perceived mistakes, missteps, U-turns and incompetences of his time in power, then I don't think from within the Labour Party, which is where this decision will be ultimately made, I don't think that the pressure would become irresistible. I could be wrong. That's why the phone lines are open for you to tell me why I am. But if you can't concisely and clearly tell me A, why he's in so much trouble, and B, why he is now very likely on borrowed time, then Well, we've got a bit of an issue, haven't we? So let's find out. OK, the number you need is 0345 6060973. And you can, of course, text me on 84850. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The time now is 19 minutes after 10.
LBC.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations, and Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories, too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It depends partly on whether or not, like me, you did a politics A-level in 1990. But drawing on your knowledge of the last 10 years of UK politics, or perhaps the last 50 years, or in my case, 34 years, when I sat my A-level. But of course, I was studying a period long before 1990, when I sat my A-level. Concisely and clearly explain why Keir Starmer is in so much trouble. 0345 6060 973. George is in Rotterdam. George, what would you like to say?
Hi there, James. So the reason that Keir Starmer is in so much trouble is because he's a liar. He's been in trouble for some time, and it's weird to me that you're acting like this is not an embattled prime minister who has just had scandal and embarrassment after scandal and embarrassment.
What are the other scandals?
So all of the U-turns, the fact that
let me make a distinction between doing politics badly and breaching the ministerial code, or calling upon colleagues who've breached the ministerial code to be protected and looked after, or ripping up the rule book, trying to abandon ministerial...
No, I see what you mean.
It's a really important distinction it's crucial. So what are the other scandals?
Yeah, I'll answer your question. So the other scandals, if you want to... I mean, I personally, I think that lying on your manifesto is a scandal. Yeah, I think
that's a scandal. Can you name a politician who hasn't?
Is that the standard you want to hold Keir Starmer to? I mean,
no, but you're misrepresenting what a manifesto is. A manifesto is a wish list. Literally nobody except the continuity Jeremy Corbyn contingent think that a manifesto is something
them.
That you are that you are legally required to deliver on. Largely, George, because the world changes between writing a manifesto and actually achieving power. But I want to focus on scandal, because we haven't got any yet.
So if you want to define scandal as him breaking the ministerial code, I have no other example of that. If you want to talk about why Keir
what about
Starmer
calling what about Starmer. Calling for other colleagues who've broken the ministerial code not to be punished or to be protected? What about breaking the law? Has he ever broken the law?
I don't understand this pivot, James.
Well, I can think of... I think it's, well, then... I, so, well, you can rewind live radio, George. You
you can rewind live radio and listen to the 20-minute introduction, because I've cited cases of previous prime ministers breaking the law. So we just want to be clear on the use of this word scandal. Are we going to actually accept that he's done politics very, very badly? Your claim that there's a long list of scandals that he's been involved with is absolute nonsense.
So I consider that it's scandalous to constantly U-turn on his policies, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you not? Is that okay to you? Because I think that this...
I think it's bad politics. I don't think it's scandalous, mate. What word would you use to describe Jeffrey Epstein?
I don't understand why you're pivoting away from Keir Starmer. It's weird to me that you are trying to take
this
away.
I'm defining what the word scandal means. You're saying bad politics is a scandal. I spent 20 minutes explaining egregious corruption and calumny are the measure by which Keir Starmer is not being judged today. I'm happy to let it pass, but you haven't got any scandals, apart from U-turns on policies that happened entirely in public and were never lied about.
I've already said that if you want to define scandal as something that is breaking ministerial code or the law...
Well, let's define it with the dictionary, shall we? Would that help?
Yeah, if you want. Sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, isn't that a good idea? Rather than George's definition, should we go with the dictionary?
Tell me the dictionary definition of scandal then, James, and I'll tell you if I use the wrong word.
I'll tell you what it isn't. A political U-turn. A political... Well, I'm not going to look up scandal from the... All right, I will look it up, mate.
Fine. In the meantime, maybe I'll get an opportunity to speak. So what I wanted to say is that I think that what is actually scandalous is the enablers in the media of Keir Starmer. He has been known to be a liar. You yourself said that nobody...
Morally or legally wrong. Morally or legally wrong and causing general public outrage.
Nobody thinks Keir Starmer is a morally corrupt serial liar. And I wonder if you...
Morally or legally wrong and causing general public outrage. That's the dictionary definition. So let's run through the list.
Is it immoral to go back on nationalisation, on promises you have made to the nation?
It's not scandalous. Immoral? Morally or legally wrong and causing general... I am reading it to you. And general public outrage.
Scandalous. It's morally scandalous. And it caused...
George, you're not listening.
What are you talking about?
Well, sorry, where's the general public outrage over what you've described? I like your laughter. It's infectious, but it's...
Are you serious?
Go on. Do you not talk to me about...
Do you not think people were outraged by the winter fuel payment?
No, I think you were.
By
the U-turn. By the U-turn or by the original policy?
Some people were outraged by the U-turn and some people were outraged by the initial fuel...
And which one are you talking about?
Policy. I'm talking about both.
So we've got the definition of scandal. It's morally or legally wrong and it causes general public outrage. You've got absolutely nothing, mate. In your own words, why Keir Starmer...
The number of...
You haven't got a single scandal.
Right. You define scandal by the dictionary.
No, the dictionary, mate.
Morally unacceptable in the public eye. Yeah, I'm rephrasing it slightly, but I think that is...
For example, the long list of things that I mentioned in the first 20 minutes of the programme.
Yeah, I agree, those are also scandals. But what about all of the U-turns that Labour have made as well?
Let's take your point then. Keir Starmer has committed loads of scandals by announcing policies and then reversing them.
By breaking his manifesto pledges. Yeah.
Okay.
Drawing on
the last 10 years of British politics, as I asked you to do,
this is what you've got. Why is this one the one that people want to focus on? I can't answer that. Why is this one the one that you want to focus on? One, I think that your chosen man, your football team, as it were, he is now dead in the water, yeah? Because this is a sexy scandal. This is the first one that really has enraged people in the way that, frankly, all of the other ones should have.
I mean, this is gibberish. I don't want to sound rude, but the idea that that people were not cross about the poor politics of U-turns and announcements is almost as if I wasted my time doing a 20-minute introduction. In the context of the last 10 or 50 years of UK politics, why is Keir Starmer in so much trouble, is the question that I asked. And the idea that he's breached manifesto pledges or that he's made policy announcements and then reversed them is respectfully, George, it's completely ridiculous, because that is politics as usual. That is politics that is normal. You're now putting yourself in the extraordinary position of arguing with a dictionary definition of a word that I asked you to accommodate. You can't really argue with the dictionary, and you can't really claim that any of the things you've accused Keir Starmer of are not politics as usual. Policy changes, manifesto abandonments, all of the things that you're accusing him of, all prime ministers do and all prime ministers have done. So the question of why he is in so much trouble now, you've described a paedophile ring as a sexy scandal.
So to be clear, you're the one that is arguing with the dictionary definition. I am saying that in
I'm not, don't change the subject. I just want to be absolutely clear that, everything you've accused him of is normal politics, whether we like it or not. Keir Starmer's been disastrous in a million different ways. The question of why he is in so much trouble today is because the Epstein scandal, in your word, is sexy and all the other stuff isn't.
So, to be clear, James, you made multiple different points, and I wanted to address them. If you want to force me...
Well, I just want to focus on that one, because I'm going to be late for the news otherwise.
Sure. So, if you want to just focus on that, I think we both know what I mean by the term sexy. It's the one that the right-wing rags can grab a hold of.
But, mate, they were all over all the other things you've mentioned. They were all over all the other things that you've claimed were scandalous. And, of course, the point I've been trying to make, and I'll take responsibility for this, obviously in your case failing to make clear, is what you describe as the right-wing rags were silent about real scandals. What you describe as the right-wing rags had absolutely nothing to say, except, of course, praise and excuses when we have prime ministers who were presiding over, forgive me for returning to the dictionary, genuinely, morally and legally wrong behaviour that did genuinely cause general public outrage. Think of the people that buried their grandmothers during lockdown and couldn't go to the funerals. I mean, to claim that a U-turn on a winter fuel scandal is a comparable, winter fuel announcement is a comparable scandal to that kind of thing is, I don't know. It seems to me to be a little bit silly, but hey-ho. On we go. George, thank you. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer remains under pressure from within Labour ranks as he looks to put the Lord Mandelson saga behind him. Backbenchers are now pushing for the Prime Minister to change his advisers in the wake of the scandal. A top Russian general has been taken to hospital after being shot in Moscow. Officials say Vladimir Alexeyev was targeted in his apartment this morning. And talks have started in Oman between the US and Iran as Washington looks to pause Tehran's nuclear program. President Trump has repeatedly threatened military action if no diplomatic solution found. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
Right now, B&Q Club and TradePoint members get 10% off every product in-store and thousands of products online. Not a member? Join today and save today. Sign up in-store or online. Hurry, ends Tuesday. You can do it when you're B&Q it. Exclusions apply. For full terms and conditions, see DIY.com or TradePoint.co.uk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on! Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. They're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:34 is the time. It is, well, if not absolutely action stations for Keir Starmer, then it is desperately close when you have left-wing commentators combining with right-wing commentators to describe sensibly just how much trouble he is in, then you are left with the unavoidable conclusion that the writing is probably on the wall. What is not so easy to establish is exactly why, especially, and I'm going to make this point again, especially in the context of British political history and recent British political history, when the, forgive me for going back to the dictionary, but what I thought was a fairly clear analysis of what scandals actually are, lies, law-breaking, the promotion of men accused of multiple sexual transgressions, lies about everything from how your flat has been decorated to the illegal and unlawful prorogation of Parliament. I am not here to defend Keir Starmer. I think it's probably time for him to walk the plank. I am here to understand precisely why, in this political moment, he finds himself in so much trouble, when in a moral or a or an ethical universe, he has not used his office to do anything scandalous. And plenty of politicians who have, over the course of the last 10 years, have been largely untouched. Alex is in Chippenham. Alex, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Love the show. I think his problems are twofold. Firstly, he was elected on a manifesto of change. I remember his front cover. And I think the British public were willing to accept it after the shambles of the last 14 years. But I think he's shown his, over the last week or so, or even appointing Mandelson to that position, the lack of due diligence from a lawyer to pick a man who's is lacking credibility or integrity over the last 20 years in British politics. Just the British public just will not accept that. And the other problem is,
but why didn't they say so at the time?
Because they trust that he's going to make a decision. Because he's a lawyer, right? He's the prime minister. They back him to make that decision. And the other problem is the backbenchers are already out for him anyway. And
this that's true. But I don't. This is in some ways the most interesting thing. And it may be that the observation I made in the introduction about this not being a science, it's not an exact science. Everything about Mandelson that he's now being hung for, he was literally being praised for a year ago.
Well, now they've got an excuse to get into him, right? And they...
Who has?
The backbenchers. Like, the last few months, it's all about the leadership. Andy Burnham not being allowed to compete. Angela Rayner standing up in the Commons this week, backing the Conservatives. He's lost the changing room. And once you've done that, it's impossible to come back.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And this takes us back to the theory of straws, doesn't it? In that this is bad, but from within the ranks of the Labour Party, and I'm interested in people that were previously either loyal or sympathetic or at least prepared to give him a go, as opposed to people who were going to be furiously opposed to everything he does and represents, either from the left or from the right. But people in all of those constituencies, supportive, loyal, relatively ambivalent, but desperate for a change, he's lost that role, he's lost that position. Does he deserve to?
Because I'm sure he's a decent guy. He just doesn't see the danger ahead. And I think you've discussed this before. He just doesn't grasp the bigger picture. He doesn't see the danger coming. He's probably too trustworthy. Yeah. But I can't believe he...
Oh, no, don't say that out loud. He's too trustworthy. I think of the Angela Rayner scandal.
I think he would be a good ambassador to the US when he eventually loses his role as prime minister. Because I think he's a diplomat. He's not a prime minister.
I don't even know if he's been very diplomatic.
I don't know. I think he's put his faith into the process. I watched Barry Gardiner on Newsnight the other night, and he basically summed it up. He didn't want to say it, but he basically said he's a dead man walking. He's lost the change room. He's got to go. And on the back of Burnham, on back of the sort of lack of direction and messaging and the U-turns. I mean, obviously that happens, but it's just another example of his sort of incompetence.
Yeah, I wonder if the main problem in analysing this is that there's going to be different answers from different... Not, I don't want to say factions, but there's going to be different answers from different constituencies. So the people on the right haven't really got a leg to stand on, because if they're trying to claim that this is some sort of unacceptable moral transgression and that believing a liar is a resignation of offence, then unfortunately, despite the fact that that position is going to be adopted by about 80% of British media, it's palpably bankrupt. It's obviously obscene for people that were cheerleading for Boris Johnson to claim that Keir Starmer finds himself in some sort of moral quagmire. I don't think anybody particularly subscribes to that school of thought. Then you've got the people in the Parliamentary Labour Party who may well have been loyal and beyond, you know, people that provided him with his loveless landslide, who have just run out of patience, actually. And this is maybe not quite the moment it would have been in isolation, but when added to everything else that they feel let down by, which no one sensibly could describe as scandals, but which nonetheless constitute straws on a camel's back, they've run out of patience. They've run out of hope, Alex.
I agree. And they've announced some policy this week, but it's just got buried under this one news story.
Quite nice policy.
We're streeting, doing great things on cancer and hospitals, but it's just lost, you know, people aren't hearing it. And until he goes, this is going to just dominate the headlines forever. I really believe that.
Yeah, and this is where my goat is got, because just because it's going to dominate the headlines forever doesn't mean it should, of course. And that's why I can't see this except through the lens of previous prime ministers and how they were treated. So it looks very, very unfair. In fact, as Polly Toynbee and Patrick Maguire put it, it looks very unfair. But it is ultimately his fault that he finds himself in this situation. Thank you, Alex. Chris is in Bishop Stortford. Chris, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Nice to speak to you.
Likewise.
Full disclosure, first of all, I'm a Liberal Democrat councillor. So that just to, in case you're thinking about full qualification, etc.
There's no bylines or anything, by-elections or anything in your neck of the woods at the moment, is there?
There's not, no, there's not. Okay. No.
Well, fill your boots. Fill your boots, councillor. Fill your boots.
So what I feel is that you're holding Starmer to the standards of what is hopefully an anomaly in British politics, just holding to the same standards as Boris Johnson and Liz Truss and the horrific, as he's called them, donkeys of the apocalypse that we've had. Whereas actually, if you look at the history of politics, which you said you know a lot about from further back, I'm sure you do, we've had prime ministers and leaders of parties that have gone because they're incompetent and not good leaders. And this is what the box that Starmer is mainly ticking here.
So we're looking at Ian Duncan Smith rather than Boris Johnson.
Indeed. You could argue David Cameron. You could argue David Cameron. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So this moment then is not that significant in the great scheme of things, in the same way. And of course, the men who accused Chris Pincher of assaulting them deserve full support and sympathy and a proper hearing. But compared to a lot of the other things that Boris Johnson was known to have done, that on its own would not have touched the sides of causing his departure from Downing Street. I did say in the introduction that we should be wanting to live in a world where a single transgression, if it's big enough, is enough to end a political career. And just because we haven't lived in that world for the best part of 10 years doesn't mean that we shouldn't try and fight our way back to it. But you see this very much as a step in that direction.
I do, and also he's a very weak leader. I think he follows the polls. I think he runs after reform voters too much.
I'm
a Lib Dem, but not, wasn't born yellow, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a Lib Dem because at the moment their principles are the same as mine or similar to mine, similar enough for me to be in the party. And I'm a big fan, for example, of Sadiq Khan. So I was quite hopeful when Starmer became leader of the Labour Party that he would be quite in line with a lot of things I believe. I thought he was a decent guy, and I was hoping he was a good leader. And I think the leadership is not there, and he's running after Trump as well.
I still think he's a decent guy. I could probably make a case for trying to keep Trump sweet being a defensible policy. I don't know if you saw the news regarding Chagos Islands yesterday. It looks like Trump's done another UE on that and is now in favour of the deal that Keir Starmer has negotiated, which, of course, the usual suspects were hitting him over the head with last week when Donald Trump made negative noises about that deal. So I don't know how you deal with a polecat like Donald Trump from the position of being a UK Prime Minister, but he might still be a decent bloke. He might still have integrity. In fact, as the Times columnist writes today, you're a perfectly decent man who means well, but you're not a politician and you knew that all along. And that is why you have to take the blame.
I think there's some truth in that. I would disagree with you in terms of Trump. I think Mark Carney has shown the way there. And I think a real leader would have used this opportunity to get closer to the EU. I'm sure you have some sympathy with that view.
I do. I don't know enough about Canadian and UK. Enough about them individually. I know enough about the UK, but I don't know whether Mark Carney's example could have been emulated by Keir Starmer. You have to think that it could have done simply by dint of proximity, geographical and economic proximity. Canada had much more to lose than we did. But you also have the fact that we just cut the umbilical to the biggest single market on the planet for absolutely ludicrous reasons. And therefore, Starmer might have felt that he couldn't run the risk of inflicting further economic damage on a country that had already committed an epic act of self-harm. I don't know. But it's not there, is it? That clear and concise definition of why he's in so much trouble today, when you look at it through the lens of the last 10 or the last 40 years of UK politics, you cannot claim that he's done anything comparable to what, for example, Boris Johnson did in terms of moral corruption. You can't claim he's done anything comparable to what Liz Truss did in terms of basic competence. But you're going to really struggle to claim that he should see this storm through and that he deserves to come out the other side to have another crack at it. Peter Mandelson lied to him. We've all been lied to. We have all failed to spot that we have been lied to until it has in some ways been too late. But something about this convergence of the planets, this convergence of moments, creates a situation that I truly think feels unsustainable. It might wobble back again, but at the moment I can't see. I think it's a case of when, not if. But I'd love to take a call from you if you are absolutely chomping at the bit this morning with fury at the idea that we're writing epitaphs for a man whose political career is far from dead. The time now is 10:46.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
The Mandelson affair has exploded into one of the biggest political crises in more than 50 years, calling Starmer's judgment into question and sparking a backbench revolt from within the Labour Party as MPs demand answers. Join me, Lewis Goodall, as we cut through the headlines and ask, is this Starmer's Partygate moment? And with Andy Burnham relegated to the sidelines, who would be next?
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save more. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 2nd of the 2nd, 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life.
And it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Do you remember when George Bush posted a picture online of the Obamas as monkeys? No, of course you don't. I don't know that we're going to talk about this today. We're probably going to fill our boots with Starmer until Sheila gets here. But if I ever needed any proof of the point I tried to make to you on a daily basis about flooding the zone, about things being so awful now that truly disgusting things go almost unnoticed, then this would be the, well, it wouldn't, would it? Because I was about to say this would be the greatest proof yet, but it wouldn't be. There'd probably be other things that were even more disgusting that we've already moved on from. Davey, to give the man full credit, has picked up on this. Donald Trump has posted a racist clip of Michelle and Barack Obama having their heads superimposed onto monkeys' bodies. Inarguably and irrefutably one of the most disgusting racist tropes of our time. And it falls to Ed Davey to write this morning, Trump is a vile racist bully. We should all condemn this without hesitation, but something tells me Farage will find a way to make excuses for his best mate Trump. I hope I'm wrong. I expect that Nigel Farage will point out that Bernard Manning, something. But that, I mean, what's the word you use to describe your reaction to stories like that, to news like that? And that, I mean, rightly or wrongly, that is why I find myself interested in a slightly different way from some people in Keir Starmer's trials and tribulations. Because looking at his position through the lens of recent events, he is still pretty close to squeaky clean. Listen, I fully appreciate there are people who want to call him a genocidal maniac, and there are people, as we discovered earlier, who want policy U-turns to be described in the same breath as proper scandals, genuine moral outrages. But sensibly, he's still pretty close to squeaky clean. He has proved to be very bad at politics in many, many ways, and he has fallen foul of a extremely effective liar. An extremely effective liar whose promotion to the embassy in Washington was greeted with widespread admiration and congratulation precisely because he was such an effective and successful liar. So I think I am feeling a bit sorry for Keir Starmer this morning, but not to the point of defending him from calls for this to just end now. That's the problem, in that I can't neatly and concisely tell you exactly why he's in so much trouble. But that might be the point. In fact, it's what the whole introduction to yesterday's programme was about. It doesn't necessarily matter what the moment is. All that matters is the full weight. And of course, people who think that he should never have got the job in the first place, or people who will always be diametrically opposed to anybody who's not from the far right or the right of politics, all of those people have views, but they're not interesting views. The only interesting views are people who wished him well and no longer think that he deserves their support, because that is where the interesting stuff happens, in the hinterland, in the grey areas that are neither binary nor tribal nor laid to or tied to football fan type tribalism. This is beautiful from Alison. This is not a word I use very often to describe texts. It's the overwhelming feeling of disappointment, James. Each one makes your heart sink a little further. I remember how happy I was when he got into power, thinking, yes, he's a good man, he will fix us. And sadly, that's not the case. I don't even know if I'd go as far as you on the fixing.
and the goodness. I still think he's a good man, but and I still think he might have been able to fix us with a slightly different hand of cards and with a slightly different skill set. But the comments about disappointment, it's like that line from Clockwise, isn't it? It's not the despair that gets you. It's not the despair that gets you. It's the hope. It's the hope that gets you every time. Alec is in Manchester. Alec, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. So I've missed about half an hour, sorry. But the
what?
First caller...
You I can rewind like... live radio and ring me back, mate. Seriously, this is outrageous behaviour. Do you think I'm here for my own entertainment?
Well, yeah, sorry.
Go on.
So this is off the top of my head. I wrote them down because I just genuinely think I'm very forgetful. So whether you agree or disagree, so his donor at the start of his premiership, with the clothes, the concert tickets, it's a scandal. Whether you agree with it or disagree with it, I think it is.
I'm not going to get into it. I mean, you claim to have missed the first caller to the programme, but the dictionary definition of scandal would be a morally or legally wrong event that caused general public outrage. And I don't think that taking a few suits and some spectacles is morally wrong. I'd give you politically stupid, but I don't want to cheapen the word scandal in a world where we're discussing an international paedophile ring of billionaires, Alec.
Yeah, so I think you could disagree in the sense that you could see it as corruption. So I don't see it as corruption. I do think it was wrong, but yeah. Then you've got Rachel Rees in the Commons. I'm not sure if that would you class it as a political thing, where he didn't stand by her. I suppose that's a political thing, sorry. Morgan McSweeney in general, I think he's a huge collection of scandals.
Get my dictionary back out. I mean, what is a scandal that you associate Morgan McSweeney with? Given the dictionary definition of... I don't even know why we need a dictionary definition of it. Just look at Boris Johnson's premiership. Look at things like sending Jacob Rees-Mogg to lie to the Queen, lying to the House of Commons repeatedly, lying to his own independent advisers on ethics, lying to everybody under the sun again and again and again and again. That's scandalous. Breaking laws is scandalous. Hosting parties when the rest of us weren't allowed to attend our grandmother's funerals is scandalous. Or attending parties. I don't want to cheapen the word scandal, because I don't think that Keir Starmer has done anything remotely scandalous.
Okay.
Being rubbish at politics can be a reason to lose your job as Prime Minister. But do we really want to use the word scandal to describe this man after the last 10 years that we've lived through?
Okay, on to the next one. There's the grooming gang inquiry.
Go on.
Have I missed that? Someone mentioned that one.
The what? The grooming gangs inquiry. Well,
I think the victims did not take that particularly well. And I think it is a scandal.
There are scandals there, but Alexis J points out that she's conducted an exhaustive investigation into child sex abuse in this country, up to and including the grooming gangs, and that the last government didn't implement hardly any of the recommendations that she made, and she was hopeful that the new government would, but that process got somewhat sidelined and ambushed by calls for another one. So, again, it's not really scandalous.
So I wholly agree, but then the big one for me, Peter Mandelson in the first place, I don't understand how anyone didn't... He openly admitted he advised a paedophile after his conviction. Why was he ever in position? And Keir Starmer can blame the vetting procedure, but he sacked Louise Hague for fraud. He didn't vet her properly. So, personally, he's made that mistake. He could have fixed the process then. If he's going to blame process, that's his job.
Yeah, but
he's got to take responsibility.
Again. This is why I'm so interested in the subject and the difficulty of absolutely pinning it down, because everything you've said was true before the latest revelations emerged.
I did phone in and I did say this is disgusting. I thought, to be honest, Peter Carroll, the business secretary, his comments around Nigel Farage, I don't like Nigel Farage, but calling him a paedophile sympathiser while appointing Peter Mandelson. And to be honest, I remember attacking Lewis Goodall for not investigating enough as a journalist. I just thought it was disgusting.
I don't actually remember the Peter Kyle episode that you referred to, but that puts you in the right place this morning. It doesn't actually explain or answer the question that I'm asking about the rest of the world.
What do you mean?
Why now? Why this? Why now?
So, I think, really, the politics of Around the Man, I don't think he's good at it, and I think he would openly admit that. In fact, he has done. He's not a politician. That's what he says. So I think the political elements have tanked the public opinion of him. And, I mean, they have with me as well, in certain regards. Not the same as most people, so weirdly. I'm quite liberal.
You clearly think about these things a lot. Can I ask, and you don't have to answer this question, because I don't want it to feel like an ambush. And I will now receive that regular and perfectly important list of things that have been achieved under Keir Starmer's premiership, but I think that's a touch of whataboutery on a morning like this one. Who do you like? Who do you fancy for the big job?
So I phoned you around a year and a half ago saying, I like Keir Starmer, I think he's a good man, I like what he's... Yeah. It was around that speech around immigration. And I said, I like him, I think he's a good man, I trust him. And I've lost that trust in him. And now, honestly, I don't know who I like.
No.
I think Ed Davey's not liberal enough, weirdly, for a liberal Democrat. And I used to be a paid-up member. Keir Starmer's not socialist enough. And the Conservatives aren't conservative enough. They're just right-wing...
You should write a book, man.
Honestly, I just think there's nobody that actually has ideology right now. And it's bizarre to say that. Maybe I'm just an idiot, to be honest.
No, I think you might be a genius, actually. It's one or the other, Alex. So I'd take the W if I were you. But you've got a choice between populism and managerialism. With very little room in between. I don't know whether Ed Davey is being a little bit unfairly treated by your analysis, but I think we're a few phone-ins away from having a look at what we want to happen in the event of another general election. The next question we may well be asking is what we want to happen in the event of a Labour leadership contest. And at risk of being a party pooper, the chances of a Labour leadership election serving up quite a large surprise up to and including a victor who is not even currently a household name should not be underpriced. But it's back to Starmer after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister remains under intense pressure from his own MPs over the Peter Mandelson scandal. Backbenchers are now pushing for Sir Keir Starmer to change his advisers in the wake of the saga. Sir Keir has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for believing what he was told by Lord Mandelson about the extent of their friendship. But the Labour peer, Baroness Harman, says that's not good enough.
How can something be both astonishing but also completely predictable at the same time? And I don't think there's any point Keir Starmer being angry with Peter Mandelson. I think he's got to be reflective about himself. Why on earth did Peter Mandelson even get in the room to be considered for this ambassadorship?
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. A top Russian general has been taken to hospital after being shot in Moscow. Officials say Lieutenant General Vladimir Alexeyev was targeted in his apartment this morning. The 64-year-old is the deputy head of Russian military intelligence. It's not yet known who was behind the shooting. Sir Elton John has started to give evidence in a High Court privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He joins the likes of Prince Harry and Liz Hurley in bringing legal action against Associated Newspapers Limited. A&L has strongly denied any wrongdoing. A government minister has promised that student loan thresholds will be unfrozen in a couple of years. The income level at which graduates begin to repay their loans has been frozen until 2030, affecting more people as wages rise. It comes amid a wider conversation about the fairness of the system. The Education Minister, Josh McAllister, has spoken to LBC.
We need to make sure that those graduates on Plan 2 loans are able to repay in a fair way, and I think we are getting the balance right because we're making sure that people only start to repay when they start earning just under £30,000. That threshold will be frozen only for the next couple of years. And that is to make sure that the budget adds up in the round. The reason for that is so that we can get interest rates down and inflation down and get the economy back to where it needs to be.
And the cost of a TV licence will rise to £180 a year from April. It amounts to £5.50 in the increase, the equivalent of an extra 46 pence a month. Ministers say the rise is in line with inflation. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up four at 10,314. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy, without breaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours in the south by the afternoon, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Subway knows you love a good deal. So say hello to Sub Yay. Weekly deals that will make you go, yay. Like money off your fave subs and spuds, getting bonus points on your order, or free upgrades to a meal deal. That's Sub Yay. Get all the best offers exclusively for Subway Rewards members. See the Subway app for specific offer availability and T's and C's.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 11. I tell you what, there's a danger in this country at the moment, or at least in politics. And I've talked about footballification for years. I sometimes wish I'd never come up with the word. Nobody really likes anyone. Or rather, everybody's got someone that they dislike more than the person that they like. It's as if we define ourselves now by our antipathies, and our oppositions than we do by our enthusiasms. I'm not having a go at you, by the way. I think I've possibly I'm definitely guilty of this over the last few years. I am a lot more exercised, for example, by the four donkeys of the apocalypse, by the jockeys that rode the four donkeys of the apocalypse into the heart of the public space in this country. Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity. Shaping up for another crack at power, I'm a lot more exercised by that than I am by any enthusiasm at the moment for anybody in the Labour movement. And I don't really know why. Perhaps it is because of some of the things that we have talked about. But just as by way of an insight into my world, it's more or less 50-50 at the moment in my inbox between people. I mean, there are plenty of other messages as well. Between people who are upset with me for going after Starmer, for critiquing Starmer, for criticising Starmer, and people who are upset with me for reminding them that they were absolutely fine with all of Boris Johnson's myriad scandals, but are somehow pretending that this one is huge. So somewhere between those two positions lies the good stuff. Lies the good stuff. I'm not going to apologise for reminding you of what you not only put up with, but positively cheered and pretended wasn't important at all when Boris Johnson was Prime Minister. And I'm not going to apologise for providing you with an honest and authentic critique of my very sad journey to a place where I find it very hard to muster up any enthusiasm, let alone support, for Keir Starmer continuing as Prime Minister. The only thing that stops me from going all the way down that path at the moment, and I'm not going to hit you again with the observation that it's the hope that kills you, not the despair, is the absence of any obvious destination. And, of course, the real politic of the elections in May, the fact that we probably don't want to go into those, and nobody wants to go into those with a brand new leader. It is not long, is it? It's not long since we were talking about how Kemi Badenoch would be endured until the locals and then dispensed with shortly afterwards. Her numbers, her polling has barely improved, and it still, I think, falls way short of where they were at the time of the last general election. But perceived success or perceived progress is relative in politics, and it is no longer her that people are suggesting will be dispatched shortly after the local election results come in. I can't see much argument against the idea that Starmer is currently in that position. But I suppose if you wanted to overdose on optimism, you'd point out that Kemi Badenoch was in that position not long ago and is not anymore. Which leads me to the question that I'm not going to ask you this hour. And that is about what could come out now that would save Starmer. And the reason I'm not minded currently to ask you that question, although I reserve the prerogative to change my mind, the reason that I'm not currently minded to answer that question is because I'm not sure anything could. I'm not sure that documentary proof that he was not in any way warned off Peter Mandelson would change the optics of what we're currently seeing, because so many people are persuaded by their own convictions. When you've got Harriet Harman coming for Keir Starmer, you've got a major flipping problem. A major problem if you're in Keir Starmer's camp. And I don't know. I mean, it's the short answer to that. I don't know quite what rescue would look like. These documents are made public. It becomes clear why he didn't want them to be. And it also becomes clear that there is nothing in them that paints him in a bad light. It is either the intelligence services or the White House or another that's going to be embarrassed or upset by the contents, as opposed to Keir Starmer. Remember, the switchboard is not something that I can control. If you're frustrated, as Steph is, by the absence of people supporting Keir Starmer, then there is only one thing you can do about it, I'm afraid, and that is dial 03456060973. If there were a long queue of people here, not to bury Starmer, but to praise him, then you would have heard them already. It is, I'm afraid, a very, very lonely camp at the moment, but hopefully not an empty one. 03456060973 is the number you need to continue the question of clearly and concisely nailing down why he is in so much trouble at this precise point, particularly in the context of the last 10 or indeed 50 years of UK politics. And then I have got a second question for you, and you might at first glance think this is weird, all right? And it might be something we should have asked earlier this week. I don't think we did. But why did he appoint Peter Mandelson? So have another listen to what Harriet Harman was saying in the news bulletin there. Harriet Harman, you know, sort of Labour royalty, so to speak, and not somebody who is prone to either internecine warfare particularly, or indeed hyperbole, speaking, I mean, for my mind, speaking undiluted sense, actually. I don't know what she was saying at the time, but in many ways it doesn't matter. Speaking undiluted sense, and yet not really addressing the question of why something that we can all sit here now with 2020 hindsight and condemn, why on earth was he appointed? But what about asking that question in a slightly different tone of voice? Why did Keir Starmer support Peter Mandelson? Why did Keir Starmer appoint Peter Mandelson, given that now there is an almost unanimous conclusion that it was a heinous, heinous decision and an appalling appointment to make? So I know that most people praised it at the time, and respect and applause to people who didn't. Alec in Manchester, for example, and even Maurice Glassman, who has proved the stopped clock theory rather well this week, who warned against appointing Peter Mandelson because of his associations with Jeffrey Epstein and other issues, while cozying up to Donald Trump, who, of course, was Jeffrey Epstein's best friend for many, many years. But what, what on earth explains Starmer's decision to appoint Peter Mandelson? Isn't that weird? I mean, why did he do it? At the time, everyone thought it was a brilliant idea. Now, it might look like one of the stupidest decisions ever taken in the history of politics, or UK politics. How on earth have we gone in the space of a year from that is a stroke of diabolical genius to that is an absolutely incomprehensible act of political insanity? In the space of 12 months, we've gone from cheerleaders to epitaphs. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. Bob's in Brighton. Bob, what do you reckon?
Morning, James. Hello, I think Bob. It's the nail in the coffin for him after a litany of failures, even from his supporting side.
This is the point, isn't it, that I've been a bit impatient with this morning, in that there'll be different answers from everywhere, and we're all a little bit in danger of seeing what we want to see. But are we saying that no one really cares that much about this moment? They're just seeing it as the perfect opportunity to exercise negative views that they already had?
Not completely. I think this is a powerful enough blow to any political leader to really not come out a judgment this poor, but because of the last 12 months, his party have got no time for him. That's what I'm reading.
Why did nobody I mean, why did hardly anybody not just fail to object at the time, but actually applaud and cheer the original appointment?
I don't know enough about the Labour Party's power structures to know how much...
Well, why didn't you?
Sorry? Why didn't I what?
Why didn't you say that at the time that this is an appalling appointment? This is so obviously awful.
I did with my friends. I mean, I don't know if you've seen them. There's a meme going around, but by voting Life, I've basically seen Mandelson resign from the government in disgrace 3 times.
That's extraordinary. Is it only 3? Are you sure? Is it only 3? Hindujas? The Robinson House?
Yeah.
And I suppose an ambassadorship counts as the government in a way, doesn't it? And so not, how on earth could they have given him another go when everybody knew how dodgy he was?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where, to start with judgment, what was known, who was instructing what, who championed the idea of Mandelson. I don't know people who are generally, who was championing him being appointed at the time? That's a question for them, I guess.
Well, I mean, everybody from, and these are not necessarily people that we would normally turn to for guidance on matters political, but Michael Gove and Nigel Farage both thought it was an absolutely brilliant appointment.
And obviously they also get on very well with people like Steve Bannon, who are heavily implicated in the Epstein files.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I also find myself realising a little bit too late in the game, Bob, that should have been an alarm bell rather than a vindication.
Yes.
What have you just done, Keir? I've just appointed somebody to ambassador to Washington, and Nigel Farage and Michael Gove think it's a brilliant idea. Ah, do you think we might have a problem here, Prime Minister? Mm. No one did that at the time. Why do you think, and I know that you were on hold before I actually asked this question, so you don't have to answer it if you've got things to attend to, but why do you think he hired him? Why do you think he appointed him?
Okay, so whether it was McSweeney or Starmer that really pushed for this, and Starmer obviously has to bear the brunt of it, but
yeah.
you read your colleague Lewis Goodall's Substack today about he wasn't appointed...
Not yet. It's like roast potatoes at Sunday lunch, Bob. I save it until last in the day, so I will read Lewis's Substack after the show today. But I mean, by all means, paraphrase Lewis for us.
I think you've already mentioned someone else has summarised it the same way, and it's Mandelson wasn't hired in spite of Epstein because of the link, and because we've heard from people like Alistair Campbell recently that Mandelson likes to move in these circles.
Yeah.
There's a much bigger picture here of international financiers and their influence in international politics, whether or not it's related to sex crimes. Everyone else seems to be quite at ease with these people and their power and influence, and Mandelson was happy to work
swapping
in those circles.
A little bit of information. Yeah, what have you done today? Oh, I've helped one of the richest people in the world get even richer in ways that an ordinary voter would never be able to dream of. There's a lot there, Bob, actually, and I don't know how much of it Lewis has picked up on, so I should read that with great interest, but I think the observation that he was hired because of his associations, not despite of them, is going to be very hard to disprove, and the weirdness of it that I haven't got the is it scope, is that the right word, to properly break down yet, is that you've got someone like Steve Bannon riding various populist and racist horses while claiming to despise things like global elites and claiming to despise things like backroom deals and that the ordinary people are being closed down by billionaires, and he's smack in the middle of it all. And they really are doing all of the things that conspiracy theorists from the right have been accusing liberals and left-wing people of doing for years. And to be clear, this isn't a right-wing, left-wing thing, by the way. There are people close to Epstein who would historically have been perceived as very liberal, and there are Democratic politicians there as well as Republicans. But the abiding theme, actually, and Bob makes this point very well, is wealth, isn't it? How many times have I sat here and said to you that you just got to look at who is in the business of protecting wealth? And when I say that, I usually think of it in financial terms. Protecting wealth from taxation, protecting wealth from regulation, protecting wealth from accountability. Who is in the business of protecting wealth? And that is, of course, a right-wing obsession. It's a right-wing practice. But I didn't really see the business of protecting wealth extending to sexual deviancy and paedophilia. But,
It's hard not to look at it through that lens today. Phone lines are open. You'll struggle to get through at the moment, but Bob's about to hang up and you might be able to grab his phone line if you're quick. Question that we've been asking you all morning is about clarifying concisely the real, the basic reasons for Keir Starmer's current travails, which are probably politically fatal. But I'm also interested in, unless we've already answered it comprehensively, the question of why did he hire him in the first place and what's changed? Ah, there it is. I love it when that happens. So we can speculate about why he hired him in the first place and we may come to a broad sense of consensus, but what exactly has changed? And just before we head to the break, I would point out to you again that European politicians and public figures are falling like flies for tenuous connections to the Epstein files, and they come no more tenuous than Keir Starmer's, while Donald Trump's regime, which is chock full of Epstein friends and fans, has suffered no casualties whatsoever. It's 11:19.
This is LBC.
Come on, quick, we have to run.
Wait, what? Run to where?
The mini sale event. Keep up.
What? Huh?
The mini sale event. Savings across the range, even on the iconic Mini Cooper.
Whoa!
And that's on top of all existing offers.
Right, let's pick up the pace.
The mini sale event. Amazing offers to act fast on. 5th to the 9th of February at Vines Guildford Mini. Applicable on new mini orders placed during the sale event and registered by the 30th of June 2026. Visit mini.co.uk/sale event.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
You're hopping from call to call, cameras on, pretending you're fine. But underneath, you're irritable and craving a smoke. Don't let nicotine cravings ruin your focus. Nicorette Quick Miss Mouth Spray starts to relieve smoking and vaping cravings in as little as 30 seconds. Make 2026 the year you quit and enjoy freedom from smoking and vaping with help from Nicorette. Quitting made real. Nicorette Quick Miss Mouth Spray contains nicotine. Stop smoking or stop nicotine vaping aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. Whether it's a curious kitten or a wobbly-legged puppy, they're cute. They're chaos. And sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. So the only thing you have to worry about is keeping them away from your favourite vase. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
I mean, 2020 hindsight is a wonderful thing. So I think that people who called this early and called this long ago deserve a little bit of credit today. I am, as you know, why would you know that? How presumptuous of me, but I am, in case you don't know, no longer active on Twitter. I mean, even if it hadn't been turned into a site that allows every pervert on the planet to undress children at Elon Musk's invitation, I probably would have left it this month, but I left it over a year ago. But someone has sent me a little screenshot of something Jemima Goldsmith has posted about a tweet she posted back in 2013, under the perfectly acceptable boast, "This aged well," she wrote, "Peter Mandelson is one of the most odious, self-satisfied, misogynistic men I have ever met. Compellingly, fascinatingly horrible." So, I mean, nobody is claiming that he has emerged unexpectedly as a nasty piece of work, but the louder these voices get, and have another little listen to what Harriet Harman had to say earlier today. Someone who is historically loyal to the Labour movement, if not part of the Keir Starmer project. You have people who are entitled to say, "I told you so," And you have people who are not entitled to say, I told you so, who are actually shouting, I told you so, louder than anybody else. I'm not quite sure which of those categories Harriet Harman falls into, but Jemima Goldsmith clearly falls into the fully entitled to say, I told you so category. Here's Harriet Harman talking in the last few hours.
How can something be both astonishing but also completely predictable at the same time? And I don't think there's any point Keir Starmer being angry with Peter Mandelson. I think he's got to be reflective about himself. Why on earth did Peter Mandelson even get in the room to be considered for this ambassadorship?
Is that a phone-in? Has Harriet Harman given us an extra dimension to our conversation this morning? How can something be both astonishing and entirely predictable at the same time? 03456060973 is the number that you need. Harriet Harman there talking to Sky News' Electoral Dysfunction podcast with Beth Rigby and Ruth Davidson. Beth Rigby, of course, who asked the second best question at yesterday's presser with Keir Starmer after our very own, Natasha Clark, knocked it out of the park. Harman's a regular feature on that podcast, but nothing compelled her to go that far in her condemnation of Keir Starmer. One thing I've discovered, and I try to stay away, if I can, from socialising with political types too much, unless I've known them long before they became political types, is that Starmer has got detractors in places you might not expect. He has something of a reputation for having been less than what's the word that I want? I don't want to engage in sort of lazy it's not gallantry, that sounds sexist, but being less than kind, shall we say, to some Labour figures that he could have made more of an effort with. I don't know if Harriet Harman is in that category or not, but it is certainly a category that contains more than one person. Rax is in Loughborough. Rax, back to the phones. What would you like to say?
Long time listener, James, but first time caller, a little bit nervous. Apologies for that.
It's only me.
Yes, it is.
Don't make me hit you over the head with a dictionary, Rax, and we'll be absolutely fine.
Oh, you know what? And I think that kind of highlights some of the things that I was thinking on this topic, but I'm going to take it back a couple of steps to the beginning of the phone-in, if you don't mind, mate.
Of course.
I think one of the reasons why Starmer's head is being called for, and I think it will go, is, and it's probably a slightly controversial opinion on this, but I blame the left mainly for this, and I think this is a response that I have to a lot of stuff that's going on in politics at the moment. And the reason I do is I think there's a level of moral absolutism about the left that causes its own problems. Now, I define myself as leftist in my thinking, but we create a rod for our own back on this. Like, we build hills to die on, and the right
it could do. I mean, I'm hearing the word tanky in the back of my mind. You're talking about people that will defend the Iranian regime, but who are absolutely adamant that Keir Starmer is a war criminal or something like that. It's not moral absolutism. It's a form of, it's a fetishization of bogus ideological purity. And I know the characters you speak of, and we all do, and they're still worshipping at the altar of Jeremy Corbyn, bless them. But are they really? I mean, they might be slightly overrepresented on social media. They haven't really got the power or the agency to cause Keir Starmer any harm.
Yeah, but I don't take it as far as those characters, like you mentioned. I think Labour backbenchers, let's be honest, like, if Starmer's going to go, it's not going to be the general public that forces him out. It's only going to be the Labour Party and the Labour backbenchers that does it. And I think they're guilty of this. I think that they're the people in the background that will call for his head. And then if there is a confidence vote for him, it will be those that are the deciding factor. And I think there's
It will be MPs worried about losing their seat because of Starmer's personal unpopularity that forces the issue if and when it does.
Agreed. Can't disagree with that at all. But
it won't be bogus ideological purity of hypocrites and idiots that polluted the Labour Party for half a decade, but are happily in retreat now, then they're not going to get Starmer's scalp.
They're not, but the thing is, they will vote in or out of favour of these topics, won't they? They'll be the ones in whether or not the public pushes for an idea or not. I think there's going to be a confidence vote on his part. And I think that this idea that, whether it be on any of the U-turns that he's made, that they are, I don't know what word to use, but missed by, then there's going to be an element of that's going to play a huge part in it. And I think I think one of the things that I really liked Starmer for in the first instance was he looked like an individual that was going to create a broad church for the left before he got into power. Yeah, and I think that broad church would have been a really healthy thing for British politics in general, in my opinion. And instead of that, he shifted to the right, which is not good. And don't get me wrong, that really
did on some issues. On other issues, he shifted very far to the left, most notably on the winter fuel issue, which everybody hated.
I think that's bad comms again. I think that's this is something the Labour Party's been guilty of from over a year and a half ago. Like, I think the comms on it is atrocious. I think Lewis Goodall, your colleague on this topic, said a really, really interesting thing on the news agents many moons ago. And they said, in the event that they had just spun it as Richard Branson is getting a winter fuel allowance, then no one in the country would have had an issue with the problem. But no one did. And I think the comms on the Labour Party is genuinely atrocious. But irrespective of that, I think that he's annoyed everyone on both sides. So the U-turn on the environmental policies that he put forward in his manifesto. So there was a massive pledge of funding for that they U-turned on day one. That would have divided the party in the first instance, and then it was an ongoing problem from there. But
none of this really explains why he's in so much trouble today.
And I think this is what I was going to get to. And I think, don't get me wrong, like I said, that level of moralism versus morality, and I'm sorry, I'm not Marxist, but I think that there's an element of that plays a part. But
with you. I understand your point. I disagree with you. I think you're giving these sort of clowns and characters far too much power and agency. They've been shooting at Keir Starmer since long before he became Prime Minister, and will continue to do so long after he's left, because that's what they do. That's what defines their politics. It's the politics of heckling. And when they get their chance on the main stage, they fall apart in extraordinary and violent fashion, and that's been true forever. But what I'm puzzled by most, or not puzzled by, but probably informed by, Rax, is the way in which people on the other side of politics, people who are, if you like, more populist right as opposed to populist left, can close their eyes and put their fingers in their ears to epic misdemeanours, to law-breaking, to huge moral transgressions, and still essentially be making excuses and cheerleading for him. They'd still pay Boris Johnson hundreds of thousands of pounds a year to write a column for the Daily Mail, despite having written an entire dictionary of disgraceful behaviour. And they can be somehow succeeding in creating the idea that Keir Starmer has done something awful, despite the fact, which is the second part of my question this hour, that they cheered him to the rafters for it at the time. Great debut. I'm grateful for it. Thank you, Rex. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The time now is 11:31, and Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Senior ministers are to hand over any electronic communications between themselves and Lord Mandelson. The government is preparing to release files about his appointment as US ambassador, despite his ties to Jeffrey Epstein. A top Russian general has been taken to hospital after being shot multiple times in Moscow. Officials say Vladimir Alexeyev was targeted in his apartment this morning. And the costs of a TV licence will rise to £180 a year from April. It amounts to a £5.50 increase, the equivalent of an extra 46 pence a month. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service is really good.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:34. Ewan won't hear this, unfortunately, for the reasons that will become clear when I read out his text. I'm voluntarily turning you off now for the first time in living memory and many years. The constant anti-Starmer ranting is beyond ridiculous, James, and also incredibly tiresome. I'm obviously going to disagree with you. This is what people want to talk about and what people want to say. And if you don't think that the vultures are circling, then I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you. And if you don't think they should be circling, then 03456060973 is the number that you need. On the other extreme, this is nice. This is unsigned, unfortunately. This is the best show ever. Listening to all the lefties blame everybody else. He's had loads of scandals over suits, clothes, tickets, and a flat for his son. But boo-hoo, it's everybody else's fault. I presume that is sent in good faith. But how on earth you can claim that one bloke, because it was Wahid Ali and all of those issues, who paid for him to update his wardrobe and lent him a flat when his son was revising for his A-levels, if you think none of which, of course, broke any codes at all. But if you honestly think that stands comparison with sending Jacob Rees-Mogg to Balmoral to lie to the Queen or unlawfully proroguing Parliament, or lying to the House of Commons repeatedly, or breaking the law repeatedly during COVID, living at the address that broke more COVID laws than any other address in the country, then there's nothing I can do for you. I'm glad you're enjoying the show, and it's fantastic that you think you're listening to a load of lefties blame everybody else for what's happened to Keir Starmer. But if you honestly think that taking some spectacles and some clothes and borrowing a flat so his son could revise for his A-levels is in any way comparable to what's gone on in the course of the last 10 years, then you are, I'm afraid, whatever it is that the four donkeys of the apocalypse leave behind when they've moved on to their next catastrophe. Truss fan, probably. Johnson fan, definitely. Brexit fan, indubitably. Austerity victim, almost certainly. And yet still cheering for it, because something clothes. I mean, the football stuff was even the maddest. You haven't even mentioned the donkey sanctuary that the Mail on Sunday tried to claim proved that Keir Starmer was a wrong one because he bought it for his disabled mother, a field in which she could keep donkeys, and he continued to own it later up to the point when he sold it, and that was it. That was the story, and that was proof positive that Keir Starmer was either a communist or a wrong one. There we go. I don't know exactly why this moment has created such peril for Keir Starmer, but it is obviously linked to Peter Mandelson, which is why the second question I'm asking you this hour is the question about why he hired him in the first place. I think it's worth remembering. That's all. It's worth understanding. Rhiann is in Swansea. Rhiann, what would you like to say?
Hello, I'm afraid I am the cliche. I'm very nervous. Long time listener, first time caller.
It's only me. It's only me, Rhiann.
I just think that Keir Starmer is damned if he does, damned if he doesn't.
Yes.
To use your metaphor of the four donkeys of the apocalypse, he's having to wade through the ordeal that's been left behind. He's got such a tricky tightrope. So many people have got so many expectations of him and have pinned so many hopes on him. And what he is, I think, is, as you said, a very, very decent man, a very honourable man. And unfortunately, politics is such a minefield at the moment that the most successful people in politics have either been extremely selfish sledgehammers like Donald Trump, or extremely Machiavellian types like Mandelson, or those who feel so entitled that everything belongs to them anyway, such as Boris Johnson, or deluded like Liz Truss.
What a grim analysis. I'm desperately trying to find fault with it, but I'm not sure that I can. The things that we prize, because we're so short-term, Rhiann, aren't we? The things that we prize in a short-term, news cycle-dominated electorate are not the things that should matter most, but they do.
I genuinely think that if he were to employ Boris Johnson's technique of just sitting and riding it out, then I think that would possibly be the best thing that he could do, because we've got people on the left who are, as Rack so perfectly put it earlier, such a high immoral stance.
Bogus moral stance. Sticking up for the Ayatollahs, but convinced that Keir Starmer is the problem. I mean, let's not forget the idiocy of their position and their self-righteousness.
Oh, yes, of course. But you've got that on the left-hand side, and then, of course, you've got Starmer battling what Johnson never did, and that is the press and Twitter, the cesspit, as it now is, and all the other ways in which, I mean, even now on LBC, even you are discussing Starmer in these terms. And it's like, well, we're just adding to the fodder. We're adding to the fuel.
Yeah, but we can't not discuss it in these terms. I mean, he's in proper trouble, and it is self-inflicted. Exactly. And the Epstein revelations regarding Peter Mandelson are epic.
Yes.
The reason why the parallels with Johnson are so important, even though obviously people still shilling and cheerleading for Johnson get so bent out of shape by them, is precisely for the point you raise. He can't style it out, Starmer, because to style this out, he'd have to have styled out 100 things already. That's why the parallel with Donald Trump, or at least the mention of Donald Trump, is so powerful. You can't be Teflon unless you are constantly misbehaving, unless you're constantly transgressing, unless you are constantly lying, that then you can get away with it. But you can't get away with it if you get caught out believing a liar, you're toast. If you lie again and again and again and again, you're not toast. That's the bit I've been trying to unravel all morning, and we probably never will, Rhiann, because it's not something that you can reason your way out of or into.
I think the irony of it is, I think, that Starmer is behaving in a way that my children, if I raise them right, you know, as I feel that I would raise them correctly, that they would be behaving in a similar way when they're older. He's worked well, he's got himself through university, he's did that job.
DPP.
Yes, thank you. Like I say, I'm a bit nervous.
Right.
And when he has done something, he's apologised for it. And he's not done, you know what I mean? There is a principle in his behaviour there. He's not, I think, you know, as your previous callers and you said earlier, I think he is a good man, but he's not a politician.
As Patrick McGuire writing in the Times today, the other thing you've taught your children, of course, and I think reading between the lines of what you said, you acknowledge this, is that even if they are sorry, even if they say sorry, and even if they are truly contrite, that doesn't mean that they're not going to get punished for what they've done.
Exactly. But whether, you know, you've got to have an appropriate punishment, And I think that the situation at the moment is, to be honest, I've been using the analogy of the straw that breaks the camel's back with my children quite a lot lately. But this, I think, is the amount of straws that Boris Johnson was allowed to have is infinitely more than the amount of straws that Keir Starmer has.
Well, they're not. They're straws. I think, as we established at the top of the show this morning, they're categorically not scandals, unless you're absolutely bent out of shape by prejudice. But they are still straws, and they may not weigh anywhere near as much as a scandal does, but they weigh enough when there is enough of them to break the back. The only thing I'm not entirely clear on is whether you think he's run out of road.
I don't know. I think it depends on how he handles it. I mean, I was listening to a podcast. I don't know if I can name it.
God damn these podcasts, Rhianne. It'll never catch on.
No, I know. How dare they?
Of course you can name it. It depends who it is. Quiet name Riot. It, and then I'll tell you whether or not you can name it.
Okay, Quiet Riot.
Oh, that's outrageous. Presented by Alex Andreou, who also does a beautiful podcast called Podyssey.
Yes, Podyssey
about Greek myths and things. That's probably my favourite podcast of all. So no, you categorically can't mention that. So please don't.
No, I won't.
Also, who was that idiot on the Christmas special? Did you hear that? What a prat he was, honestly. Me. Does he ever shut up? I tell you what, the worst thing would be if someone gave him a radio show. Anyway, carry on, Rhianne. Sorry.
Oh, God forbid any podcasts.
Well,
they had a guest on, and he was, I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but he was commenting on the fact that he was an advisor, and it was when they were doing something to do with education, and Michael Gove released the information against this chap's advice when the London Olympics has been on. So it would absolutely be buried.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that Starmer is, it's the reverse of it, where he's got this wonderful new policy that he was hell-bent on, and rightly so, promoting yesterday. It's lost in the fallout of Mandelson.
And that is what I touched on yesterday with these comments about momentum and critical mass, in that it may not ultimately matter whether or not this is a career-ending moment, because it will prove to be a career-ending straw or a premiership-ending straw. And it will feel, I think Sam Friedman was the guest on the podcast, actually, who has a brilliant Substack as well, given that we struggle sometimes to find commentators and media that isn't part of the Four Donkeys of the Apocalypse pit team. You get that problem with a desperation for simplicity. Explain to me why it's all over. Well, I can't, because it goes back years and it encounters lots of things. What I don't have any problem with, or what I think is 100% clear, is that Starmer's CV, the best efforts of our friend who's still pretending to be cross about spectacles and suits, Starmer's CV is still squeaky clean. And yet, there are echoes of the last days of Boris Johnson when you start talking about buckaroo or straws breaking the camel's back. Thank you, Rhianne. I don't know what you were nervous about. People queuing up to compliment the quality of your call. And I would welcome more defence of Starmer. I'm not mounting it myself today, because I'd never lie to you. I can't pretend not to feel what our texter in Liverpool described as just profound disappointment. You can't keep it up indefinitely. He has not done or proved to be any of the things that we hoped he would do or prove to be. Or if he's proved to be some of them, and he's done some of them, he hasn't done enough. And somehow this mess is proving to be the fatal bit. But it's only a piece, albeit the biggest piece, perhaps, of an already half-assembled jigsaw. Thank you, Rhianne. The time now is 11:47.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
The Mandelson affair has exploded into one of the biggest political crises in more than 50 years, calling Starmer's judgment into question and sparking a backbench revolt from within the Labour Party as MPs demand answers. Join me, Lewis Goodall, as we cut through the headlines and ask, is this Starmer's Partygate moment? And with Andy Burnham relegated to the sidelines, who would be next?
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay bi-monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Every day, the noise gets louder. Deadlines tighter, commutes longer, opinions stronger, and social media fakes get harder to spot. You need concise, verified, easy access to the stories that matter. You need the Bulletin app. Trusted news from The Independent in a simple, bite-sized format. Download Bulletin today on iOS or Android. Bulletin. Trusted news for seriously busy people.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores. So your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers, your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker, what's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker, search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10 minutes to 12 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've got quite a lot to unload on you, actually, with regard to this Donald Trump post that features Michelle and Barack Obama's heads superimposed onto monkeys' bodies. Yes, you heard me correctly. Can't wait for Dick Littlejohn's column about why Donald Trump's so brilliant and Keir Starmer's so awful and why everybody has been waiting years to see the Obama's head superimposed onto monkeys' bodies. And thank God his hero, Donald Trump, is the man to deliver it. But I've just realised something that is pretty grim. And I'll explain more after 12 noon. I've also looked at a video, I think, of a kind of town hall type meeting in the United States of America that Donald Trump's niece Mary Trump posted, in which a man describes a well-documented visit in 1945 to a death camp where the liberating U.S. soldiers insisted that German people from the nearby town accompany them to the camp. And you can probably work out why. If I throw Alex Pretty's name into the mix as well, you can probably work out why I just used the words that I used. And the ease with which we could look away, gloss over, never excuse, but perhaps roll our eyes and move on from another moment that would have been of unparalleled awfulness just 2 years ago. Anyway, that's coming up after 12. Before then, Starmer, more on Starmer, more Starmer drama, which feels like something of an understatement. But how have we come to this, asks Laura. A decent man in charge who tells the truth, apologises for his mistakes, and is capable of changing his mind when circumstances change, is now in danger of losing his role. It's so telling how far we have fallen. If you'd sent that in earlier, I'd have tried to get an hour of response out of it, because I think it's a fascinating analysis. It's one I almost wish I full wholeheartedly agreed with, but I think the size of the mistake, albeit that everyone's got this wonderful 2020 hindsight, the size of the mistake is underpriced in your analysis, Laura, but goodness me, everything else is right there. Decent man in charge, tells the truth, apologises for his mistakes, changes his mind when circumstances change, all of which could be either disputed or even typified as negative, but which certainly is not immediately and obviously wrong, is now in danger of losing his role, which is why I was obsessed at 10 o'clock this morning with looking at it through the lens of recent politics. The lens of recent politics. Ben is in. Ah, here we go. Ben's in Benidorm. Ben, what would you like to say?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I bet you sometimes wish I was Steve from Stevenage, don't you?
Stevenage would work. Hal from Halifax would be okay. Bri from Brighton I could live with, but Ben in Benidorm is all day long for me. Go on.
Thank you very much. Can I maybe just address the brilliant point that your texter just made about... Laura, I believe her name was.
Yes.
I agree with a lot of that. I think that he is a really decent fella and all the rest of it. But you can be decent and you can be honest and you can be ready to admit all your mistakes. But equally, you can be a bit rubbish, right? Yeah. And I think he's... I mean, look, my wife often says it about me. I'm a decent fella, but I'm often very rubbish about stuff, So that counts badly against him. Now, to try and answer the first two questions, or the last two questions you asked, and I'll just try and explain my own experience, because like yourself, James, I did not vote for Starmer because I thought he's not the Tories. I really voted for him with genuine hope. Right, I really did. And I remember that first day when I saw them going into Downing Street. It was almost, they looked so glamorous, and it was almost a kind of Kennedy-esque moment for me, yeah? And I thought, this is going to be great. And that was followed by disappointment after disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. Then this thing comes along, and it's the point where disappointment metastasizes into disgust. And you can't get over disgust as a politician.
Actual disgust.
Yeah, because I just think that at that point, I was with some chaps yesterday in one of the English bars in Benidorm.
Oh, yeah.
And they were talking, and this is the problem, right? Because people are not as, they're not as subsumed in politics as maybe you and I are, yeah? Certainly
sure,
as you
lucky
are.
Them.
Yeah?
Right? Yeah.
And they were just saying, all this Starmer paedophilia stuff, he's got to go. That's what people are getting. They're getting that. They're getting that note of just Starmer. They're almost leapfrogging Mandelson and going straight to him. It's a catastrophe politically,
and hideously unfair. Would it be unfair of me to speculate on how the people you were with feel about Donald Trump?
They're absolute bloody Herberts. I mean, they really are, you know. I mean, what can you
because
do?
Because Donald Trump is all over. Keir Starmer's not
as
in
I
yet.
As I often have these kind of arguments
This is where the St. Petersburg bot farms start working, bringing grooming gangs into it, lumping it in with other scandals. So the people who claim that Europe and the UK in particular has become somehow overtaken by child rapists are the people in the United States of America who are doing absolutely nothing. About all their mates
about,
who are all over the Epstein files.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct, 100%.
An actual child rapist. Nothing to see here, we need to move on. But hey, look over there at some stories we've made up or exaggerated about Britain or Europe.
Wow. And most particularly what I think they believe and what I think a lot of other people are beginning to believe. I mean, it's hard to know sometimes because I listen to your phone-in, so I think I'm getting a kind of quite a narrow perspective. I listen to yours and Sheila's phone-ins, but I get quite a narrow perspective on what British people are thinking.
Well, people might be thinking, you're getting a full-throated perspective on what's actually true and happening and real, but that, of course, is not, unfortunately, half the story anymore.
Yeah, and I think that when you're in sort of, when you're abroad and you've got a lot of they like to call themselves expats. I call myself an immigrant because that's what I am. When you are with people self-described expats, you often find that astonishingly, the most sort of antediluvian, reactionary nonsense comes from their mouths. But that's not to say they're not
No, and they're in the box seat. They are, you know, the whatever is left behind when the four donkeys of the apocalypse move on to their next triumph, their next challenge, and you know, the rest of us are left to clean up the mess. And I guess we thought Starmer would, and he tried, and it looks like he has not succeeded. Thank you, Ben. Stay safe. 11:57 is the time. Peter is in Gillingham. Peter, what would you like to say?
Well, I understand why Starmer did it at the time, appoint the ambassador of Ferrero Rocher and Defence Against the Dark Arts. If you'd have done your HR analysis on that, you have, you know, essential desirable qualities usually, and Mandelson did have some. He is a snake. He's at least as oily as Trump.
He's our snake, wouldn't you? He's our snake.
Yeah.
The logic.
Yeah, so he could have faced down the Trump's temper tantrums and his toddler... Toddler tantrums, yeah. He could have done all that. And I think he was probably lobbied by McSweeney and co. to and that overrode any sensible analysis. What can he do now, you've said? You keep asking, what can he do now?
No one's answered it. Go on, what's your answer?
I think he stood up for decency and the rule of law. And I'm not a fan of Starmer or Labour, actually, I say that.
Sure.
It comes with some terms and conditions. There's four. McSweeney must go. He's the architect of much of this. He also persuaded him to get rid of Sue Gray. Brexit got to be ended as soon as possible, not in 2032, as my Labour MPs tell me. If he wants to fix the fundamental, he's got to do that. And the policy making, which preys to the far right, must stop, which your previous caller did say. And, you know, there's quite a lot of good stuff that is going on in Labour.
And the latest speech did that, or attempted to, and then threw in a strange line about British values, which I understand, but which, of course, undoes some of the good that he does when he tackles racism and tackles extremities. And then on the other side of the fence, you've got, as Mabel reminds us, and many people remind me via text, you've got renters' rights, workers' rights, free school meals, breakfast clubs, Great British Energy, trade deals, genuine trade deals, not Kemi Bader, not pretend trade deals, job creations, privatisation of some railways, and more to come there. I mean, it's all there, but it doesn't matter, does it? Thank you, Peter. Apologies to Alison, to Tony and Garant and Andrew and Philip and many more. But okay, if I said to you something, would you understand what I meant? I said I wasn't going to talk about the thing that I'm going to talk about next. And that fills me with both shame and horror because of what it means has happened, if not to all of us, then to me.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, senior ministers are to hand over any electronic communications between themselves and Lord Mandelson. The government is preparing to release files about his appointment as US ambassador, despite his ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Sir Keir Starmer has apologised for believing what he called Mr. Mandelson's lies about his friendship with the late sex offender. The Labour MP Kim Johnson has told LBC News she thinks Sir Keir's premiership is on the rocks.
He's struggling. I think we've catapulted from one crisis to another, you know, and I just think he stood at the dispatch box when Mandelson was appointed and said he had his full support. His leadership and how he makes judgments and decisions needs to be seriously questioned. If I'm being totally honest, I don't know whether it's redeemable.
Peter Mandelson denies any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. A senior Russian military official is in hospital after a reported assassination attempt in Moscow. It's understood Lieutenant General Vladimir Alexeyev was shot several times in an apartment block this morning. It's not yet known who was behind the shooting. Sir Elton John has started to give evidence in the High Court privacy case against the publisher of the Daily Mail. He joins the likes of Prince Harry and Liz Hurley in bringing the legal action against the Associated Newspapers Limited. A&L has strongly denied any wrongdoing. The Health Secretary Wes Streeting has told LBC that a debate about the student loan system is worth having. He's admitted it's quite tough for graduates, many of whom have accrued tens of thousands of pounds in interest. The Chancellor has insisted that last month the system is fair and reasonable. Mr. Streeting was asked on LBC's Call the Cabinet if he agreed.
I do think we need to look in the round at all of this. I think there's a debate for us to have as a country about what our priorities are. And there are all sorts of things you could do with student finance, for example. You could say, well, the interest rate is too high. Or you could say that the repayment threshold is too low. Or you could say that the amount that's taken each month is too high. There are lots of variables. They all, by the way, come with costs.
And the cost of a TV licence will rise to £180 a year from April. Ministers say it amounts to a £5.50 increase, the equivalent of an extra 46p a month. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 20 points at 10,329. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy, with outbreaks of rain pushing north, some blustery downpours in the south, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 12, our final hour of the week together, and we will step away from Starmer drama, although I will bet you any price you please that colleagues will be returning to this territory later in the programme. Lewis already making it clear he's going to be all over it on Sunday morning, quite rightly, of course. But something rather weird has happened to me today, and it may have happened to you as well, and you may not have noticed it. So, I don't know what social media platforms you're on. I'm only on Blue Sky these days, and sometimes things happen elsewhere that migrate to Blue Sky because people feel that they deserve an even wider audience than the one that they've achieved on Twitter, as it used to be known, or in this case, Truth Social, which is the one, of course, that Donald Trump set up. I think possibly, was it after he got banned from all the other platforms for telling blatant lies about the 2020 election? That was only 6 years ago. Accounts were being shut because he was telling blatant, obvious, proven lies about the 2020 election. And 6 years later, he's still telling the same lies. He's back in the White House and he is supported by the owners, the multi-billionaire owners of precisely the platforms that... You can't make this stuff up, can you, when you remember it? But it is a short film. It runs just over a minute and it features more blatant lies about the 2020 election, dressed up as these things often are in implausible clothes, but featuring absolute lies. And about a few seconds from the end, there is a short cutaway to manipulated footage of Barack and Michelle Obama with their heads transposed onto the bodies of monkeys. And at first I thought I was misreading or mistaking what was in front of me. And then the thing that I want to talk about happened. Because then I kind of swiped right. I kind of remarshaled my intellectual forces to the program that I was preparing for earlier this morning. I think he got banned from Twitter for inciting an insurrection, as David reminds me. But either way, he could go there back there now in a heartbeat, couldn't he? Thanks to Elon Musk. And I moved on from the President of the United States of America sharing footage of his black predecessor and his wife with their faces transposed onto the bodies of monkeys. I'm going to say that again two or three times for you. Because I don't know what the verb is to describe what I did, and maybe you can help, because maybe the same thing happened to you. I don't think it would happen to a black person. I moved on with a sense of disgust and horror, please don't get me wrong, but a sense of disgust and horror that has become so familiar that it doesn't sting like it used to sting. Some of this will be, I think, white privilege. We'll examine it properly together shortly. But I moved on from, wait for it, the United States, the President of the United States of America, sharing manipulated footage of his black predecessor and his wife with their faces superimposed onto the bodies of monkeys. The kind of racism that even our great facilitators of racism in the UK media would have to, would have to condemn. I can't say that out loud anymore. I would have done 2 years ago. I would have done 5 years ago. But you pick your favourite racist in the UK media and you tell me whether you think they'll call this out, whether you think they'll dedicate a column to it or an hour of their programme. And I can get on my high horse about that, but I nearly didn't dedicate an hour of my programme to it. I nearly didn't draw your attention to and focus on the President of the United States of America sharing footage of his black predecessor in the Oval Office having his face and his wife's face superimposed onto the bodies of monkeys. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what's happened to us. What are the words you're thinking of? Desensitized? You might well be traumatized by the image that I'm describing. Have I become fatigued is a good word. Have I become fatigued by it? It's not quite fatigued. I don't know what the word is because the horror and the disgust is there, but it's so constant now that it doesn't reach the parts of my consciousness it used to reach. The capacity to be shocked has disappeared. Is it? Anaesthetized. God, you're good. Thank you, Dan, for that one. Anaesthetized. Perhaps. But I was poised to move on. And this is not a moment to reflect upon why. Because that's my problem. And if you're suffering from that problem, we may one day work it out together. But today is not that day, because the second thing I thought of when I caught on to myself, the second thing I thought of and remembered when I realised what had happened to me, you know, the king of the centrist dads, not responding viscerally and immediately and violently to footage of Barack Obama and his wife having their heads superimposed onto monkeys' bodies in film shared by Donald Trump, the President of the United States of America. Extraordinary racism, overt racism, irrefutable, disgusting, hideous racism from the very top of the Western world's power structures. Helpless and hopeless, says Paula. Helpless maybe, but never hopeless, I hope. See? And the second thing I remembered was the phone-in I conducted a million years ago when Barack Obama became President of the United States of America. And I think it was white naivety or innocence that meant I was shocked to discover so many black Britons celebrating that victory in ways that I, as a white man, could understand when they were explained to me and could adore. But I could never feel. I could never look at my daughter, as one caller told me she was looking at her son, and believe that morning that what had seemed impossible the day before was possible now. I wish it hadn't in some ways, and this sounds a little bit silly, but I wish that phone-in hadn't happened in the days before the viral clips and the YouTube films and all of the other things that mean that what we do together today is no longer the radio equivalent of fish and chip wrappings, It's a newspaper today, fish and chip wrapping tomorrow in the olden days, but is actually there forever. In some ways, if people are minded to look for it, they'll be able to find it. Not true anymore. You will be able to find it. But that morning, all those years ago, constituted one of the most magical things that's ever happened to me on the radio or at work at all, and possibly in my life. Black British people explaining to me why Barack Obama's election changed their world. Changed their world. And having the grace and the kindness and the generosity to take me with them on a journey of understanding. And then this morning, the current incumbent of that office shares footage of that man and his wife, Barack and Michelle Obama, which would not be tolerated by a primary school teacher. Footage of them with their heads superimposed onto the bodies of monkeys. And what do you do now with it? Do you even bother pointing out that the election lies are something else we should be focusing on because he's getting ready to resurrect the lies in order to undermine the midterms and possibly the next presidential election? Do you... I hope nobody would do this, but I'd have some sympathy if you would, because everything's so broken now. Call it another dead cat. Oh, come on, James, don't fall into the trap of talking about him putting the superimposed heads of Barack and Michelle Obama on monkeys' bodies, because you should still be talking about Epstein. He's trying to distract you from Epstein on that. It's 2026. Sitting in a studio behind a microphone on which I once shared my absolute joy at hearing you tell me what it meant to your son, your daughter, your family, your life, to see a black man making his way into the Oval Office, and now that black man has his head superimposed on the body of a monkey by the current incumbent. And it doesn't get any worse than that if you care about racism. It doesn't get any worse than that if you care about decency. It doesn't get any worse than that in so many ways if you care about all of the things that we used to think most of us cared about. And, of course, many of us still do. We're just so battered and beleaguered and broken by the unceasing tidal wave of filth that comes out of this man and his closest acolytes that something like this, even for someone like me, can run a very real risk of disappearing under the waves. Disappearing under the waves. This, writes Dale, is what it is like to live with racism. This isn't new. We normalise behaviours like this when we're very young to survive. You've reached the point where you've noticed. I don't think there's any other way to do this topic than to invite you to tell me how hurtful this is to you. What memories it resurrects, what horrors it revisits, and how important it is. Because if the arrival of Barack Obama in the Oval Office was so important to so many, then the presence in the Oval Office, in the same office, of a man who would share footage of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's faces superimposed onto the bodies of monkeys is a moment of comparable importance. So I just want you to tell me what this does to you. Because it doesn't really matter what it does to me. I'm never going to be on the sharp end of this sort of white supremacism or racism. If I ever find myself hurt by it, it will be for allyship, not for ethnicity. It won't be the colour of my skin that brings me to the attention of these vampires. It will be my compassion for their more obvious and more immediate victims. It's so disgusting. I can't quite believe that the level of disgust didn't appear as quickly as it once would have done, because we're all so used to this now. The number you need, particularly perhaps if you've never phoned me before, is 0345 6060 973, because all you can do is call it out. When you stop calling it out, something dies inside all of us, doesn't it? When you stop calling it out, something withers, something shrivels, and you're left with vacuums where consciences once sat. The President of the United States of America. 0345 6060 973. You can't be lost for words. I can't be lost for words. We've got to keep calling it out, however futile it feels, however fatigued or anaesthetized or inured or exhausted you might be. You've got to keep calling it out, and you've got to keep reaching for your humanity on a morning like this and telling other people who share your humanity but not your ethnicity what things like this do to you and yours. Because if the morning that I spent taking calls from people explaining why the election of Barack Obama as President of the United States was a moment of personal joy now sits in sharp and hideous contrast with the morning when the President of the United States engaged in the kind of racism that we haven't seen really in the public space since the 1970s. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. It's 1218.
This is LBC.
Right now, B&Q Club and TradePoint members get 10% off every product in-store and thousands of products online. Not a member? Join today and save today. Sign up in-store or online. Hurry, ends Tuesday. You can do it when you're B&Q it. Exclusions apply. For full terms and conditions, see DIY.com or TradePoint.co.uk.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Caterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun rises on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
And I don't know that there's any room for deliberation. Oh, he's just done it to draw attention to the lies about the election. He's done it to distract from Epstein. I don't care why he's done it. He's punching people. He's punching people of colour all around the world when he does this. And I almost moved along. A lot of you are citing Danny Baker. And I understand why. Danny Baker, when Harry and Meghan had, I think, their last baby, Danny Baker posted a picture of chimpanzees dressed up like human beings with a new baby. And his defence, which, for the record, I completely believe, and I think I spoke to him at the time on air in front of you. I think this was the first interview that he gave, just made it clear that he was so detached from royalty that he was acting in a position of complete ignorance about everything, even about Meghan Markle's ethnicity. I don't want to relitigate or resurrect that point, and I'm not cross with anybody who's reminding us, because his career ended over a similar image when his position was considerably more defensible than Donald Trump's. So there you go. It can end a radio presenter's broadcasting career, but it won't touch a president of the United States of America. What does that tell us? And I know, listen, don't think I'm being arrogant, or at least no more arrogant than usual, but I'm right, aren't I? I'm right. You almost turned the page on this one. I don't know whether the black people would have had even anything similar to that experience. It wouldn't actually stun me because you've dealt with more than I have. And you're arguably even more inured, even more anaesthetized to it all. Jeffrey Epstein's best friend posting hideous racist tropes. And we're talking about why Keir Starmer's got to go for believing a liar. Tony's in Luton. Tony, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Long time no speak. But I can honestly say I wasn't shocked when I saw it. It wasn't a big surprise. Because as I was telling your guy on the phone, there's an old saying, if you want to expose a fool, let him speak. And this is the sort of thing that you've emboldened Donald Trump so far, so much, they've emboldened him, that he thinks he's at the top of the mountain and he can say what he likes.
Yeah,
because it started a while back. Remember, well, I couldn't remember his name, but Charlie Kirk.
Yeah,
when he was shot, and they were looking into his life, and oh, he was a great orator, he was a great debater. He said some shocking things about black women, and it was never really pulled up on or held against him. But he was like they glossed over it to say, oh, but he was a great orator, he was a great debater, and when you embolden these people. Eventually, their true colours come out.
They never retreat. They never step back. They always step further forward.
And I can tell you, and I've speaking to a lot of people recently, there's an awful lot of black and Asian people making quiet plans for the future if they have to move. And that's quite shocking to hear something like that.
Because you worry that what happens in America yesterday happens in the United Kingdom tomorrow.
Exactly.
And Nigel Farage is leading in the opinion polls, whose own racist interventions are very well documented, and who is still yet to apologise for the hideous abuse that countless school contemporaries recall him inflicting upon them when he was young. What do you feel, though? Today, I understand that you don't feel shock. What do you feel?
Because I honestly tell you, I'm not shocked. Because you feel hurt as a black man.
Yeah,
but you're not shocked because you over the past few years you're recognizing it was only a matter of time.
How depressing. The air of a sort of grim inevitability, Tony. Thank you, mate. Take care. Remember, if you're struggling to get through, every time I say goodbye to someone like Tony, it frees up a phone line potentially for you. And the only real question I'm asking you this hour is, borrow my microphone to remind the rest of us just how disgusting this is. Okay? 0345 6060973. Kalisha is in Greenwich.
Hi.
Hey, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, I do remember that image very well, and I was just when I was speaking to your producer, he was asking me what I felt about it, and it's the shock isn't there; it's sadness and hurt, just like your previous caller said. But that's again it. That shock, that hurt gets less and less and less. I'm Indian. So, you know, I'm one of these people, I get pushed down, I stand up, go again. And I always, you know, I'm always for the underdog. However, there's no ramification for anything. And it was, I began to say less and less. Only for my own self-preservation, because it's me that is left with that anger, that hurt, that frustration when nothing is done about it, where no one is held accountable for their actions. especially when, as you say, you're at the top of the mountain.
And because if he is not held, if he's not held accountable for his actions, then it trickles down, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what's at the bottom of the mountain? Rubble. It doesn't matter what goes there. Nothing's going to touch the top. Everything just goes to the bottom of the mountain. And, you know, again, as I was saying to your producer, it's for my own self-preservation. I just kind of like, I notice it, and I don't get me wrong, I do stand up for things when I see things which aren't right, especially whatever it is. But you just get people just shrugging, so, you know, you just got to live with it. And I'm like, no, you can't just live with it.
You see, I've done a lot of phone-ins over the years, and obviously I have a lot of friends from backgrounds that are very different from mine. And one of the things that people like me need to be educated about is the generational shift in families with a recent history of migration, ethnic minority families with a recent history of migration. It's a bit different for those of us with Irish heritage. And parents would subscribe, or grandparents now, because I'm getting very old, Kalisha, would subscribe to the keep your head down and don't make a fuss school of thought, because they lived in a world where this kind of imagery and this kind of racism was commonplace and not just tolerated, but, actively enjoyed. And then the next generation began to fight back, whether you're talking about Dr. King or Malcolm X in the United States of America, mm-hmm. or whether you're talking about people like Bernie Grant and Diane Abbott in this country, the next generation would start to fight back. And then the generation after that, featuring people like Akala. And it was tricky for me to understand sometimes why the parents of those generations and the grandparents of those generations had been so quiet. And the answer was that the mountain in front of them was too big to climb. And therefore, there's not much point even starting. And their sons and daughters and their grandsons and granddaughters started climbing. But now, things like this make me wonder, and this is what your call has done to me, so I want to clarify that I've understood you correctly. It feels like they're slipping back down again.
Absolutely, because, you know, as they're climbing up the mountain, the person at the top is just throwing rocks or pushing more mud down. So that route, that, you know, that climb gets heavier. And as you're taking one step up, you're taking two or three back.
And what would I don't even know, and I bet you don't either. What would a welcome reaction look like from, I don't even ask, from Donald Trump supporters or cheerleaders in the UK media or UK politics? The likelihood of Nigel Farage or Richard Littlejohn coming out with anything to say about this is pretty slim. What would a meaningful response from people that you might expect a meaningful response from look like?
You're not, James, I don't know.
No,
because any response would be disingenuous.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do? And if Donald Trump can do it, why can't I? People will be wondering, and they'll be testing it, and they're already shooting people in the face, of course. This is such a huge moment, and yet we almost missed it. I almost underplayed it. 12:30 is the time. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Senior ministers will hand over any electronic communications between themselves and Peter Mandelson. MPs voted for the government to release files about his appointment as ambassador to the US in spite of his ties to Jeffrey Epstein. A senior Russian military official has been taken to hospital after being shot several times in an apartment block. It's not yet known who was behind the shooting of Lieutenant General Vladimir Alexeyev. And Sir Elton John has described alleged invasion of his privacy in the media as abhorrent. He's given evidence in a trial against the publisher of the Daily Mail. LBC weather, mostly cloudy today with outbreaks of rain pushing north and east. Blustery showers in the south later. These will be thundery in the southwest, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save more. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 2nd of the 2nd, 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it!
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
You know, people ask me, what's my good place? It's in the garden, playing football with my girls. It's also knowing that because my pension is with PensionBee, I get a beekeeper, a UK-based account manager for support should I need it.
You're not very good, Daddy.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Is it news? I think it probably is. Should it be in news bulletins? Donald Trump has shared footage of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's heads transposed onto the bodies of monkeys. This is what I mean by being battered, if not into submission, then into profound confusion. What would have been the story if this had happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago? What if a British Prime Minister did something like this? I just don't know anymore, because that sounds like surrender. I really hope it isn't. David's in Bayswater. David, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah, so I think I'd have to be very naive to think that, to say I'm really shocked at this, because it's par for the course with him, isn't it? This kind of casual racism. And this is not even casual. This is like extreme kind of racism, isn't it? But
it's the worst.
Yeah, just to give you a bit of background, I'm mixed race myself. I came to England in 74 when I was 11, right? And I was in Basingstoke, and I went to an all-white school. It's virtually just three of us who were non-white. I did have some racism, but it wasn't much. But when it did happen, it was very visceral. You know, it really stuck in my head and really got in my head and has stayed with me, actually, for most of my life. These things are difficult to get rid of. I've been protected from it because I'm middle class, educated, I have a good income and so on. It's the non-white people who are working class and who are not articulate, who can't speak out when
Barack Obama's pretty successful.
But I'm talking
and he's
about
right,
that.
He's right. He's right on the end of this.
Yeah, but I'm relating what's happened on the internet to how it might affect people in Britain, this kind of publicizing of that kind of those racist images. But I feel what I'd also like to address is the complicity that people like Kelly Badenoch and the previous British Asian Prime Minister we've had, they've never really spoken about these issues because they're complicit in the system. To become part of the system and to get to the top of it, you have to kind of not bring up things like that, which are so endemic in the Tory party. So I feel the system is partly to blame.
Badenoch's been quite fun, but I mean, I don't want to sort of white-splain you, but I know a little bit about systemic racism, and I understand the importance of bringing it to the conversation. And I'd be very, very surprised. That's the only reason I'm slightly uncomfortable with it, is I would be very, very surprised if Kemi Badenoch, if and when this is brought to her attention in front of a television camera, didn't condemn it. And I'm not saying this as a gotcha or as any way of saying, oh, and then she doesn't do it and I'll She would be absolutely outraged and disgusted by this. Of course she would, David.
James, if you look at it as a continuum, she's made very racist comments about immigrants and immigration into this country. So I'm afraid she does not, her projection of non-white people and the immigrants she's talked about are all non-white. So I don't really agree with you fully about Kelly Bannon. I think she has a lot to make up
for.
Well,
all I've said is that she will condemn this. This, you know, this is directed at her and her children, this kind of racism. And she may be very, very imperfect in other areas of race relations and the race debate, but I don't think I can let it pass that she would be comfortable with this or encouraging of this, because she categorically, well, I'm supremely confident that she wouldn't. What is it, and I hope this question doesn't sound aggressive, because it really isn't meant to, but what is it about being middle class that you think somehow allows you to respond to this with less trauma than a lower class, a working class person would?
The people you mix with, are even if they're racist, they're not going to be overtly racist because it's not impolite. But a working class, right, non-white person will be living in environments where people are just more aggressive physically and verbally, and they don't have all the filters maybe the middle class, white middle class racist, okay, might have. So you wouldn't be exposed to that. And that's why I feel I've been protected from it. But not having said that, I've still had trauma because of the racism I face. And obviously images like that also get to me, but I'm not surprised at all because Trump is what he is, isn't he? He's just an embodiment of
racism. He is a racist. He's an obvious racist.
Yeah.
We're back once again. Thank you. That's a really helpful call, David. And thank you for allowing my possibly slightly ignorant question, ignorant in the good sense, as in I didn't understand or I didn't know, as opposed to ignorant in the bad sense, which describes Donald Trump, well, inadequately, really. Look, if I'm wrong about Kemi Badenoch, I'm wrong about Kemi Badenoch, and I will say so if and when she is asked about this particular issue. But I know that the money Stephen Hester gave to the party before it emerged that he had said hideously racist. They never talk about Stephen Hester, do we, eh? Funny that every sort of minor transgression in the Labour Party playbook gets raked over and resurrected on an almost daily basis. Callers today even referencing Keir Starmer's suits and spectacles that he got from Waheed Ali. But the fact that the Conservative Party took millions of pounds from a man who explained how Diane Abbott made him want to shoot black women never gets mentioned at all. And you wonder why I sometimes like to bring back previous experiences with Tory prime ministers to a discussion about the current plight of a Labour one. What a mystery. The clip that Mary Trump has shared online, and I'm going to play it, although it features a white man, but you'll understand why. A man, all we know about him, is a local resident called Walter. He was at a city council meeting in Arizona just a couple of days ago where the possibility of opening a human warehouse, to use a euphemism or a possible latter-day concentration camp for kidnapped, confiscated, arrested foreign-born people in America was under discussion. And it's a bit of a weird one that this was bouncing around my brain last night, and then when I got to work this morning, I was shown by you, actually, the footage of Barack and Michelle Obama with their heads superimposed onto monkeys' bodies, because the question of what we do when we do nothing, what we allow when we stand by, what we become when we are exhausted into inaction is addressed very directly by this, but I'm going to say by this remarkable man. Have a listen to this.
I'd like to share a story from a local paper in Coldwater, Michigan, dated to the 9th of April, 1945. It tells how the U.S. Army under General Patton, the U.S. Third Army, came onto what you might call a detention center just outside the village of Ohrdruf, Germany. The U.S. Army brought the leading citizens of Ohrdruf to tour the facility, which turned out to be part of the Buchenwald network of concentration camps. A U.S. Army colonel told the German civilians who viewed the scenes without muttering a word that they were to blame. One of the Germans replied that what happened in the camp was, quote, done by a few people, and you cannot blame us all. And the American, who could have been any one of our grandfathers, said, "This was done by those that the German people chose to lead them, and all are responsible." The morning after the tour, the mayor of Ohrdruf killed himself. And maybe he did not know the full extent of the outrages that were committed in his community, but he knew enough. And we don't know exactly how ICE will use this warehouse, but we know enough. I ask you to consider what the mayor of Ohrdruf might have thought before he died. Maybe he felt like a victim. He might have thought, "How is this my fault? I had no jurisdiction over this site." Maybe he would have said, "This site was not subject to local zoning. What could I do?" But I think when he reflected on the suffering that occurred at this camp just outside of town, that those words would have sounded hollow even to him. Because in his heart, he knew, as we do, that we are all responsible for what happens in our community. And I urge the council to take action to stop or stall, or at the barest minimum, to think creatively about how to exercise oversight over this proposed ICE facility. Thank you.
Just let that sit with you for a moment. The people that put them in power were responsible for what they did. Remember that the Holocaust did not begin with the death camps. The Holocaust began with propaganda and public racism, with impunity and with an invitation to people to resurrect and express the ancient hatreds that Donald Trump seems to have been weaned on. And there it is. The people who put him in power are complicit in what he does. It's coming up to 1:45. Quicken, and it was Frank Hester, of course, who donated the money to the Conservative Party, and they kept it long after it became clear that he described Diane Abbott as making him want to shoot all black women. I think I might have called him Stephen, so apologies to any Stephen Hesters out there. Frank Hester is, of course, the man that we are talking about, and it's very relevant in the current conversation, isn't it? Because I think quite a lot of nails just got hit on the head in that little excerpt. And when you think back to things that have already happened and the direction in which they could prove to have been pointing our society, you got to worry a little bit, haven't you? More of your calls after this. It's 12:44.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Is Keir Starmer's lack of political nous the thing that's really done him in? And an exclusive insight into what Ukraine really wants from us.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
It was just another day. A familiar drive through familiar country. But then, just around the corner, came the unexpected. He'd let his speed creep a little too high as he approached a bend. And he was no longer driving at the right speed for the road. The scary thing is, he didn't even realize. Driving even a little too fast for the situation is a major cause of collisions, especially on country roads where you don't know what's around the corner. Think. Don't let your speed creep.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save more. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 2nd of the 2nd, 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:47. I've done two interviews in the last week with two people who are by far, I'm sure they won't mind me saying, far from the most famous subjects that we've ever had on Full Disclosure, and outwardly incredibly different people. But they both tell tales of extraordinary journeys of overcoming adversity. And I mean, very different, and one much more obviously hideous than the other, but beautiful interviews. Not a word I use often, and profoundly moving for me as the person, the interlocutor with the privilege of being in the room with them. And I'll share one of those with you shortly, and the other one probably next week. But do stand by for that. Before then, we're looking at Donald Trump. If you're just tuning in, please don't adjust your radios, has posted manipulated footage of Barack and Michelle Obama's heads being superimposed upon to the bodies of monkeys. And we're all sitting here going, yeah, well, that's Trump. Trump's going to Trump. Well, we're not. We're making a very significant and conscious effort to treat this moment as we would have treated it before everything got burnt and broken by racists, misogynists and liars. Grant's in Dartford. Grant, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. I've just literally picked up the conversation I heard. I got in the car. I'm at work at the minute. I'm a little bit emotional, if I'm honest, because
of course,
I come from a mixed race family. My dad's from India.
Right.
I grew up with racism constantly. So you know, on the outsides of my appearance, I look like the. I looked Spanish Italian almost on the outside. So unless you kind of knew my family, you wouldn't assume anything else. But I got a lot of I had it growing up. You know, up until about my 20s, it was quite bad, and it kind of died off. Now I've got friends. My best friends are black, and I've known all my life. Got parents, my children, my best man at my wedding, ushers, everything like that. I can't honestly be in a pub with them and look them in the face and talk about this and show what that is. This is the President of the United States, undoubtedly the highest seat in the world, you know, supposedly the leader of the free world, posting something up on his Truth Social platform that is absolutely abhorrent. And when are the people in the States, when are the competition, the people that face it, when are they going to say enough is enough? This man has done so many things that are impeachable. I mean, this is morally abhorrent. It is just an absolute abomination of a post. His whole administration needs to just be completely taken out of office. You know, he's done stuff that is beyond belief. But this, just to have an audience of the world and post stuff like that is just beyond me. I just do not know how a man like this can still be in power with no one questioning his moral fibre, what he does on a daily basis. He is not worthy of the office. You know, he's not a president. He is not a person. He is beyond belief. It just cannot be allowed to carry on. When will they do anything? When will they say enough is enough?
They won't. I'm afraid the electorate can, but he is doing everything in his power at the moment to prevent them ever having an opportunity to do so, although that is far from guaranteed that he'll succeed. I wonder if you can work out why this has hit you so hard, because a few people have pointed out it's just the latest in a very, very long line of egregious behaviour.
I think from what, you know, as I said, literally, I got in the car and heard you talking about it. I had to look online to see if it was actually true. And somebody on Blue Sky had actually put an image up of it. It's being part of that community. You know, as I say, I'm not, if when people say to me, or I say I'm mixed race, they automatically assume a black father and a white mother. It's not. My dad's brown. He's Indian. Yeah. I don't class him as black. He's Indian. Yeah. Okay, but I'm from a mixed race, and I suffered it growing up. Going into, we went into a cafe once when I was about 10, and we were there very early. They were just opening the doors. We walked in, and they wouldn't serve my dad. Now, this was in the 80s, because he was. They said, "Oh, you're," it was like a place down on the coast, and they said, "Oh, you're not a member of the yacht club, the sailing club, so we can't serve you." One woman took our order and was getting ready to serve. The manager walked out, took a look at my dad, and said, "You're not allowed here." So that's just one, that's one example that sticks in my head from when I was 10 years old, and it carried on casual racism through school, through work, etc. And as I say, I deal with it a lot better now.
Of course.
But I find this thing upsets me more because of my friends that I have. And as I say, I couldn't, with any kind of front, sit and show that picture to them even.
What would they want us to do in this? I mean, I'll be getting a couple of messages from black friends at the moment, and I'll check my phone as soon as I come off air, if not sooner. But what would our friends want us to do? Do we think in this context?
Again, other than shout from every rooftop that this man is mentally ill and is not, you know, shouldn't be where he is. I mean, again, you've got to take into account that this guy's got his finger on a nuclear button.
Yeah.
You know, he is not mentally capable of doing what he is doing. He is looking at the United States as a business. He classes himself as a businessman. He's had more failed businesses than anybody in the world. He is bankrupt. How can you bankrupt a casino, for God's sake? This man has done that. And he's taking
But this feels different for some reason.
This is kind of... I've watched him over this second term. I've watched him destroy a country. He's bringing these people down, and now he's putting out tweets, what would you call it, on Truth Social. I mean, that in itself is an absolute joke, calling the platform Truth Social when he puts out nonsense like that.
And it's refreshing sometimes to hear somebody like you coming at it cold, because when when we're immersed in it, the difficulty, the danger of not being sufficiently shocked. I'm glad that you were so emotional when you came on air. I'm glad that the pain in your voice, which is born of compassion for your friends more than it is for fear of what this represents for people like you or your father, although that fear of traffic going backwards is in your voice as well. But I'm glad I can hear the trauma in your voice, because that's the thing that gets overlooked when we are bombarded with it.
Yes, there's no place for any of it. It's just, he's not fit to do that. And I was actually calling him for two reasons. As I say, I'm a big advocate for Blue Sky at the minute. I love it.
Yeah, me too, actually. It's getting better all the time.
It is getting better all the time. And this is where you get the actual news that comes in. And I saw that thing about the concentration camp that they're going to set up.
Did
and
you?
That's what it is. It is a concentration camp. And on Blue Sky, I posted, as I said, as a race, we have learned nothing. You know, I put up a picture of a concentration camp, the Jewish concentration camp, one from Bosnia. I didn't have a picture from one in America, but that's the next step. And over all of the years of us killing each other, wiping out a complete race, or attempting to, we've learned nothing from that. And that man is allowing that to happen again.
Well, he's encouraging it. He's not just a Grant. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I wish I could talk to you for longer, because I can hear the pain in your voice, but I'm nearly out of time, and I want to push people towards an extraordinary full disclosure interview. But we'll talk again. We may return to this territory next week. And just a little reminder that a few of you have reminded me of, a lot of what the Nazis did began with the depiction of Jewish people as rats. And what Donald Trump is doing today is depicting black people as monkeys, dehumanizing, othering. This is a little clip of an interview I've conducted with Mark Constantine, whose name may not immediately be familiar to you, but you will know his business, Lush, which is impossible to walk past without being overcome by fruity fumes and tempted in to well, I don't know, to buy delicious products. But he's an exceptional man. It's the only interview I've ever ended by saying to the subject, before you go, and I don't even know if this makes the edit, can I just tell you that you're fantastic? And here's a little indication of why.
There's a very popular perfume in Lush called Karma. And what Karma was, in 1973, I was living in London. And to be honest, the drug culture was dreadful. It was just people were slipping off chairs everywhere.
Yeah.
And I lived just around the corner from Kensington High Street. And at that time, cheap incense materials from India, you know, they were everywhere. And so there was this really, really strong smell of that. So I was trying to create that. Damp bedrooms, a little bit of damp bedroom, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So I built that as my, in a way, my 1973 yeah. perfume. And then I happened to have a couple of the, I don't know why they were there, they were shop fitters who were quite old hippies. And they had a van with a, this is only, well, it's 25 years ago, but they had a van with a flower on the side,
right.
And it was getting a ticket. And I heard one of them go, "Bad karma, man." And I you're like, you think, I haven't heard that for a long time. And then I thought, well, I'm going to call it Karma. But I also, in amongst that, was Radiohead's Street Spirit. So because all the notes are of a sort of intertwining middle thing, and I wanted to make this very creamy smell to it. So different things there, a bit of a memory, a bit of a piece of work, a bit of a, oh, what on earth did he just say?
Is there a form of neurodiversity here, if you're associating...
I have synesthesia, I don't know.
That's the phrase. Yeah. I thought synesthesia was something else, was colours and sounds.
Well, no, I was in a big group of 50 people,
yeah.
And I tried to describe the way I smell something, which yeah. is, so for example, tea and coffee is circular, chocolate is square. As things go up one side and come across, I can smell something that's incomplete.
Right.
You know, I know that, you're always like, and I can say that to someone else, they agree with me. When you've got an issue, you think everyone's got it because nobody else had it. Only my son, and it's genetic.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You say issue, other people might say superpower.
Well, a lot of people find it really disturbing because, you know, they'll have to stop the car to be sick or
right.
things like that. I don't get it like that. I think what it is for me is a method of expression.
Yes. Absolutely fascinating and a really inspiring bloke. And it's the only interview I've ever conducted where the guest has been reaching for a word, struggling to articulate something that he wanted to describe. And I said to him, as a consequence of what you've just heard later in the interview, I just said to him, tell me, talking about a memory, actually, and I said, tell me what it smells like. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news. There's also a range of podcasts there, like Full Disclosure and James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from this show every day. Download it now, the official LBC app, free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now, as we make our way towards the weekend, it's time for Sheila Friday's Fogarty.
I've got synesthesia.
I did not know that.
Well, there you go. That's why I told you.
Every day's a school day with you, Sheila.
Mine's different to his, though. I see dead people. No, I see I see numbers in colour, in different
really?
Colours. Yeah,
that's what I thought it was. That's the one yeah. I've heard of that before.
It can be any sense. It can be smelling
well, I know that
things.
Now. I
it
know
can
that
be
now.
Seeing music. A lot of people wow. who write music can see it.
Yes.
Amazing, isn't it?
You'll enjoy that interview.
I enjoyed the snippet. I'll definitely look it up. Thanks very much, James. Have a great weekend. Now, from 3 today... No numbers, no colours. Movement on student loan repayment, but when? Natasha Clark will be here to tell us all. Two, I've just spoken to a senior spokesperson for the Ukrainian government. We touched on Iran, what might happen there and how it might impact Ukraine. Zelensky's words in Davos. And the spokesman revealed exclusively to LBC the numbers of European troops that Ukraine wants to see on the ground, something Zelensky will speak about later next week at the Munich conference. The number might shock you. It did me. But we start again with Keir Starmer and Labour. Is it over for Keir Starmer? And if it is his lack of political nous, Westminster experience, the thing that's actually done him in?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, cabinet ministers are preparing to hand over electronic communications between themselves and Peter Mandelson. MPs voted earlier this week for the government to hand over files about his appointment as ambassador to the US. Keir Starmer has said he's sorry for falling for Mandelson's lies about the depth of his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Labour MP Ian Burns says despite apologising, the Prime Minister is still under intense pressure.
He's lost a huge amount of confidence within the Parliamentary Labour Party. He's lost a huge amount of confidence within the country. And he's in a very perilous political situation. And he needs a miracle. He needs something to turn it around.
Peter Mandelson denies wrongdoing. A top Russian general has been taken to hospital after being shot in Moscow. Officials say Lieutenant General Vladimir Alexeyev was targeted in his apartment this morning. It is not yet known who was behind the shooting. At least 31 people have been killed following a reported suicide bombing at a Shia mosque during Friday prayers in Pakistan. Government officials say almost 100 people were also injured during the attack in Islamabad. A government minister has insisted thresholds for student loan repayments will be unfrozen in the next few years, as promised. Speaking exclusively to LBC, Josh McAllister has defended the student loan system as fair. He says the current thresholds are being held to keep inflation down and get the economy growing. But leader of the Liberal Democrats, Ed Davey, has told LBC ministers are taking it out on young professionals.
That is creating real hurt amongst graduates on low and middle incomes, actually. And I think the government's going to have to review that. It's got to make it fairer. Sorting out maintenance grants would be one way, linked to at least unfreezing the point at which people make those repayments.
And Danone has recalled more of its baby formula because of worries about a toxin that could make children sick. Several batches of Aptamil and Cowangate have been pulled from the shelves. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 14 points at 10,323. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather mostly cloudy today with outbreaks of rain pushing north and east. Blustery showers in the south later. These will be thundery in the southwest, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
We're here at the Coral Fan Derby, where racing fans are ready to play Coral's Reward Shaker. Listen to that roar. What's this? They're all being rewarded. We've got the tweeters shaking their phones. They've won a £5 free bet. The fourth fanatics backing those special offers for the Cheltenham Festival. Play Coral's free reward shaker to win free bets and offers this Saturday. Oh, that's rewarding. Coral, we're here for it.
18 plus, UK online only. Max one reward offer per player per day. 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Reward restrictions, requirements and T's and C's apply. Gambleaware.org.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. A little later in the programme, after two, we're going to play a part of a conversation, an interview I did just before I came on air with a senior spokesperson for President Zelensky of Ukraine. Now, there's to be a big conference in Munich in a week or so's time. And ahead of that, and unexpectedly in the conversation I was having with this gentleman, this spokesperson, he revealed the numbers of Western troops, so including UK troops, obviously, that Ukraine might like to see on the ground in Ukraine. And I think the number will surprise you. He talked also about Iran and the impact changes there might have on the war. Iran, a big supporter of Russia in this war against Ukraine. It was a really interesting interview with him, and we got really close insights into precisely what President Zelensky in particular is thinking. So we'll hear about that at two, and I'd love to hear your thoughts as well on the usual number. But I'm going to start with Keir Starmer's position as Prime Minister, as Labour leader. Senior government figures are preparing to hand over their electronic communications with Lord Mandelson. This is ahead of the release of evidence about his appointment as US ambassador. Now, there's also a parallel police investigation into whether or not Peter Mandelson committed misconduct in a public office. And the police have asked the government not to release any files that may interfere with their different type of investigation. And it's often the case, isn't it? We saw it with COVID. We saw it with other investigations. But the messages between Peter Mandelson and government ministers, officials, special advisors and the like during his time as ambassador could take months to publish. Several Labour MPs are openly calling for Keir Starmer to at least, at the very least, fire his Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, with one saying that a clear out of number 10, I should say, advisers is necessary. Many are going further privately and some publicly in saying that the Prime Minister himself needs to resign. If you agree that he does, or that his time is up, and there's widespread opinion now that his time is up, and that that moment, in a sense, came with the new knowledge, I suppose, about Epstein and Mandelson's relationship, friendship, but also that day of debate in the House of Commons, and you could feel and see the authority ebbing away from the Prime Minister, and that is very dangerous. It might not be fatal politically, but it is very dangerous territory for a Prime Minister when that happens. We've seen it in previous history as well. And I wonder, I mean, there is always a moment, a tipping point moment, and I think we're probably seeing at least two of them this week. But I wonder whether, whether you would agree with my hunch that actually Keir Starmer's sheer lack of political nous and history and experience, not to denigrate him in his other abilities and achievements in his life, but his sheer lack of political nous, of the stuff of politics. He said it bores him. He said the intrigue of Westminster bores him. But the intrigue of Westminster, he can't afford for it to bore him. It's part of what he does. It's part of what any prime minister does, any party leader does, not least when it comes to party discipline and party loyalty. It's a big part of it. And I wonder whether that lack of political nous has been a major contributor here. Your thoughts on 0345 6060 973, the number to call. John Trickett joins me to talk more about this, Labour MP for Normanton and Hemsworth, who wrote yesterday for Politics Home that Mandelson helped sever New Labour from its roots, and this moral decay was the result. I think we're getting a sense of where you're coming from on this, John, based on that article. Good afternoon to you.
Hello there, Sheila. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yeah, good to talk to you. Let's start there, actually, given that I've just described that article. You believe that that Mandelson changed the party, what, for the worse, even if it got them into power?
Well, clearly winning elections is at least the larger part of what politics is really about. But the route to office needs to be carefully thought through. And if you think that the way to get power is by manipulating words and images and persuading people to be something which they aren't in order